Premier Radio Networks presents Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired April 16th, 1996.
From the high desert in the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, good morning, as the case may be across all these time zones. Just flashing across from the Hawaiian and Tahitian Islands in the west, east to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north to the pole, worldwide on the internet, and soon shortwave. This is Coast to Coast AM. I bid you good day. We can go just about anywhere you want to go tonight. Ebola, the subject last night. Officials in southern Texas near Alice held a quickly assembled news conference at about 8:30 a.m. Pacific time to tell all of us there's nothing to fear from the Ebola outbreak in the quarantine facility there. The official word, humans can't catch it. Now, they add to that, we're not 100% sure, and we're watching very carefully, 8 of 35 workers who were exposed. They found three more infected monkeys today, and they're now saying they may have to kill all of them. And they're considering a new law that would ban imports of any monkeys from the Philippines. So they got out front on this one quickly and said, no sweat, this is not the human form this time. Now, there are two things to consider about this. One, that they are correct in all likelihood, and it is not the human form. But it keeps coming back again and again and again. And one of these days, it is going to be. As you may have seen in that 60 Minutes piece, he said there was just this little tiny difference in the DNA molecule, or in this virus, one little tiny difference that made human beings not be affected by it. And the other, of course, is whether you believe them. In other words, under any circumstances, they would try to control it. And I think under no circumstances would they tell us. I know that's cynical, sounds cynical, but I just don't believe they would tell us. And most of the audience last night seemed to agree with that. So hopefully it is an accurate statement, hopefully. And hopefully we're being told the truth. I don't know. I guess I'm getting cynical, huh? Ted Kaczynski's cabin in Montana, according to the FBI, is, and it was a small cabin, but just packed with evidence. Try 600 pieces of evidence, things that the FBI sources tell NBC and others. Tie Mr. Kaczynski to the 18 years of death and terror known as the Unabomber. The press is, I'm rather astounded at the way a lot of the press has been covering this. I saw a talk show, I think it was on CNN, one of the talkbacks or something, asking, is Ted Kaczynski a Robin Hood? What? A Robin Hood? Can you see any aspect of this, what he did over all these years, that you would describe as heroic? Why is the American public so fascinated by this case? I mean, there has been program after program after program. The only defense mustered up so far, I saw Jerry Spence again going at it, for Mr. Kaczynski, would seem to be what Jerry Spence argues is a lethal legal blitz. In other words, an intentional campaign to leak evidence to the press against Kaczynski, to indict him, in effect, in the press. That, of course, has been occurring, and there have been a lot of leaks, so it's kind of strange. From a fellow named Mike. Art, my name is Mike, and I'll eliminate the last name. And I listen to your show on 960 KZIM in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. That's Rush's home. My idea is doing a show about people's greatest fears. You could have the standard open line, but one of the topics could be people's fears. I'd love to hear of some of the fears people have and see if I could draw any parallels to my own. In other words, for me, a fear of spiders. Anybody have a particular fear, your greatest fear? What is your greatest fear? Dear Art, on last night's show, that wonderful lady from Alberta, Canada, almost reduced me to tears. Never have I heard a more beautiful word picture of the American patriot. Her language, her tones, her assessment of the typical American's attitude toward his or her country absolutely were correct. But she was dead wrong in her appraisal of the Canadian patriot. During World War II, I served in the finest military organization in the world, the Royal Canadian Air Force. As an American in the RCAF, I can attest to Canadian courage and love of country. They may not be as vocal about it, or that would be about it, but their record in World War I, oh, well, listen, you don't even have to go into this. I'll skip the rest of it. There's no question about the courage displayed by Canadians. I think it was more a discussion of temperament, the differences in temperament between Canadians and Americans. Americans are simply more vocally passionate about everything. Frankly, we love to fight. By the way, we need to begin talking about this a little bit. April 19th, 3 years ago, Waco, 1 year ago, Oklahoma City. April 19th, folks, is Friday. The government installing metal detectors, more security, cameras, bomb detection at all kinds of federal buildings, and I've got a tip for anybody. If you're planning a trip, Friday would be a good day not to visit a federal building. It's just common sense. Friday'd be a good day not to go and go down to the Social Security counter, unemployment, or go report something to the FBI or whatever. How many of you expect a spot of trouble on the 19th? Just ask you straight out. Terrorists, like so many others, observe anniversaries, and this is one that seems to suddenly be observed. I imagine something will occur. I'm not sure what it is, have no way of knowing. Hope it doesn't, but I think, frankly, I do expect something. An attempt is going to be made, you might want to make note of this, to launch a Delta II launch vehicle on Friday. That's right, April 19th at 5:27 in the morning Pacific time. So if you're on the West Coast, don't miss this. The payload will be a Ballistic Missile Defense Organization's MSX satellite, whatever that is. If this launch occurs on time and the weather is clear, this ought to be a spectacular sight. The sky will be dark, but the missile will be illuminated by sunlight when it gets to the upper atmosphere. The missile will be launched on a north south trajectory. So if you have an opportunity, that really should be something at that particular time of the morning. And I'm sure without that information, we would have a rash of UFO sightings on Friday. Now, sticking for a moment with space, did anybody see it? New images from space, courtesy of the Hubble. And they are of something called the Helix Nebula from the constellation Aquarius. And they are amazing. Amazing. Thousands of knots of gas, kind of nobules of gas, racing away from what appears to be a dead and dying star like comets. All of these, they almost look like, from, of course, this distance, they look like sperm. They literally look like sperm. Tadpoles. But what are they really? No, we don't know. They look like comets, or if you can imagine that, sort of a fiery tadpole. But to give you some concept of the scale of these thousands of little space sperm, for lack of a better word, phrase, each one of these is at least twice the size of our entire solar system. Now, I want you to think about that a little bit. Each one twice the size of our entire solar system. And when you look at things on this scale, you've really got to wonder how creation could be limited to this little globe, this little tiny speck in the larger scheme of things. And we are that, aren't we? Just a tiny speck. One of these little space sperms, sorry, that's how I think of them when I look at them, is twice the size of our entire solar system. And when you begin to imagine things and know the scale, it's just impossible to me that the process of creation would be limited to this planet. I know that collides with a lot of belief systems out there, but that's my thought or my thinking when I see something like that. Now, completely turning the corner, somebody sent me this, and I think you'll enjoy it. The top 10 signs that you're about to get fired. 10. The collection envelope going around the office for a wife and kids has your name on it. This is a lot of job insecurity in the U.S., so this will no doubt help. 9. Co-workers suddenly asking to try out your chair. 8. Paycheck seems to be signed in pencil. 7. Your boss asks you, not including today, how long have you worked here? 6. Birthday gift from gang in office. Resume preparation kit. 5. Elevator guy says, yeah, sure. When you say, see you tomorrow. Office picture of wife and family replaced by Brady Bunch publicity still. 3. You're no longer allowed to join in reindeer games. 2. You work for Apple. And 1, the number one reason you know you're about to get fired, your boss is standing over you right now saying, go ahead, smart guy, finish that top 10 list. I wonder if that's how he wound it up. There is an interesting court-martial going on. And I've got news here reported by the Honolulu Star, but it ran on NBC and a lot of others have run it as well. It involves two Marines who are refusing to yield up DNA samples. Now, all of the military services are requiring people to give DNA, ostensibly to be able to identify their remains. It is the modern-day dog tag. Right now, we can diagnose certain illnesses, Alzheimer's and such, by DNA. Soon, heart trouble, cancer, all kinds of things will be able to be forecast just by looking at your DNA. Soon, they say, or eventually, they will be able to tell if you're likely to be an aggressive or violent person. They're going to be able to tell a very great deal about you. Now, maybe they won't look into these things, but you and I both know they will. So a couple of GIs have refused to give DNA. They say they don't know who those records ultimately will be shared with. The implications are gigantic. In other words, insurance companies. Who's going to insure you if some little hunk of DNA says you're going to get cancer? The answer is obvious. And these things have already begun to occur. One lady could not get insured, I think, because of a genetic tendency toward Hodgkin's. disease. Now, the GIs are being court-martialed for refusing to obey a lawful order. And I imagine they're probably going to swing on that one. I mean, you get ordered to do something in the military, you had better do it. But for us out here, the larger question, would you give up a sample of your DNA to go into somebody's master file? I mean, who knows what they'll be able to tell eventually from that DNA? If they found a tendency to violence, then obviously they are going to keep a master computer file of those with that genetic propensity. In other words, your name could end up on somebody's better watch them carefully list. And these are pretty tense times, aren't they? So, how do you feel about the coming DNA revolution? I'm curious. So there you go. Listen, anything you want to talk about, as an update, the fellow with the Bigfoot facts has not yet come back to me. There is, of course, a great probability that he only listens on Sunday, so we'll try then. We'll see. In the meantime, the fellow who sent me the facts about Bigfoot, if you're out there, get back to me, and we will proceed. Otherwise, I will presume, if not hearing from him tonight, that he only gets to listen on Sunday, and we will do it then, see what happens. All right, having said all that, we'll be right back.
Can speaking an ancient language cause psychic disturbance, injury, or even death? It can if it's the secret language of the Church of Satan. Find out more in the October issue of the After Dark newsletter. You can also read about voodoo, ghosts, and my editorial on the zombie at the traffic light. Call right now at 1-888-727-5505, and you'll receive not only a one-year subscription to After Dark, but the free CD of Art Bell and the Philadelphia Experiment. It's a story about time travel, Tesla, government cover-ups, all told by the man who lived it, Al Bielek. Help Al out with your purchase of the After Dark newsletter. It's only $39.95 and the free CD for $2.99 shipping and handling. Dial toll-free 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505. Or you can sign up online, safe and secure, at www.coasttocoastam.com.
Here's what you missed on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Here are the unfortunate choices. We attack Iran and any other country that we think could be a problem for us today and in the future. Or we try to work out friendly, peaceful solutions with everybody. And I'm trapped now because if we go the military route, we are committed to doing it forever. On the other hand, can we truly create a peaceful planet? I don't know anymore.
Now we take you back to the night of April 16th, 1996. On Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
All right, we've got time. Let's squeeze in a call now. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Art, hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm on Super Talk 1320 KCNR.
Oh, why do you say that?
Oh, I'm just a hometown proud, I guess.
I see. Okay. Well, yeah. Indeed, you know, they just went up on the internet.
I know. It seems like calling a talk show like this has a lot more significance than it used to for some reason.
It does. There's no question about it. It does.
I know. I just feel so empowered. It's really an interesting feeling. But well, I wanted to ask you first, could I suggest something for bump music that you play a lot?
Always.
Okay. Do you have a Stevie Ray Vaughan album called In Step?
I do not.
Or have you heard, if you ever get a chance, the very last track, it's called River's Paradise. It's a terrific instrumental.
Okay.
And I want to ask you something about a call you had a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I don't know where he was from, but this guy called and he said that he was an electrical engineer of some kind and he developed this saucer-sized object.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you know, and he could make it hover, and he said he could even operate it by remote control, and I'm wondering if he ever did follow up and send you that videotape.
Well, I don't have the tape yet, but that doesn't mean it's not coming. It takes things a while to get here. And he had to make it. So I'll let you know soon. If it comes, believe me, I'll let you know, and you know that I'll make a still photograph out of it, and we'll publish it and get it on the Internet.
Can I ask you one more thing?
Sure.
Have you had any calls yet from England?
Yeah, I had one last night from London.
Oh, well, I just love to hear that accent. And they're so much like us, and yet that accent, it's...
Well, this was an American at Heathrow. He was at Heathrow Airport when he called.
Oh, so not a true Englishman, then.
Oh, no.
But
just passing through.
You know, I can pick up K. I think you have a station in Minneapolis, and I'm in Utah, right? But
KSTP.
I can pick them up all the way out here. It's amazing.
That's a big signal. Yes, sir. It depends, of course, on conditions. Thank you very much for the call. On a night when radio conditions are favorable, why, you can hear us just about anywhere, and that's why we have our new International 800 number. And I'll tell you about that as we come back, which we will do in just a moment.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 16th, 1996. Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 16th, 1996.
It is indeed that. Good to be here. We can go any direction you want. Open lines, unscreened, unpredictable, spontaneous, sometimes very weird, talk radio. Listen, we've got an international line, so anybody out there outside of Canada, the U.S., and Mexico who would like to call us can do it absolutely toll-free, won't cost you one penny. And here's how you do it. You call the AT&T USA direct number, access number for your country, whatever that is, and then 800-893-0903. Again, and sometimes you can't get a direct access number, so just get the AT&T operator on the line and ask her to dial 800-893-0903 from anywhere in the world. It's toll-free. That's amazing. And for Mike, who asked me my greatest fear, I don't mind telling you. It's always been of the Earth opening up. I've had nightmares about that. You know, earthquake time. Big hole opens in the ground and swallows me up. I've had nightmares about that. That probably is my biggest fear. And if things began to rumble seriously and I saw a crack open in the ground, phew, boy, I'd be gone. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Art.
Yes.
A couple of weeks ago, somebody called in about a line about it to the pollsters.
Yeah, they suggested that...
I've done that since 1975.
You have?
Oh, yes.
Does it give you a secret little thrill to do it?
Yes.
It does. Let me pretend that I'm a pollster, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Hi there. We're just inquiring today. Thank you for answering the call about whether your inclination is to vote for President Clinton or the apparent nominee for the Republican Party, Bob Dole.
Oh, absolutely.
Both of them?
Absolutely.
You're going to vote twice?
Of course.
Well, that probably would cancel you from the survey.
That way they don't keep calling back.
Well, that's for damn sure. As a matter of fact, I'm sure they take your number and put a little red line through it or something.
Right.
Well, that's cool. Where are you?
Nashville.
Nashville, Tennessee.
Yes.
Have you been surveyed frequently?
No, not in the past 5 years.
5 years.
Five or 6 years.
Then maybe you hit on the key to keep from getting surveyed.
Right.
Just lie your tail end off when they call.
That's right.
I like it. All right. Thank you, dear.
Thank you.
See you later. That's Nashville. There was somebody who suggested, just to screw them up, that we all begin totally lying to pollsters. Whatever it is you intend, tell them the opposite. And a few years of that, and polls will be totally discredited. The people at Gallup scratching their heads, saying, my God, what have we done? Researching their sampling methods and all the rest of it, trying to figure out how they could come up and be so wrong so frequently. It's pretty devious. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, Art.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm wondering about the Philadelphia experiment.
What do you wonder about it?
I'm wondering if you have any information on how they made that. The Eldridge disappear?
Well, I've done a number of interviews on it, a lot of them with the precise technical specifications of the equipment that was used. So, yes, I have an idea.
Where could I get more information about that?
Well, I would say order the Al Bielek program that we did. Yes, Al Bielek was part of the Philadelphia experiment. That's what I would say.
Okay. And do you have any information on what happened to that tether thing we send up in space?
Yes, it burned up in the atmosphere about, what is it now, folks, about 3 weeks ago. As it came back in. First time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Art. This is Don in Mount Vernon, Washington, listening to on 50 kilowatt KOMO.
Oh, it's a big one. Hi, Don.
Hey, I got a couple of what ifs for you.
All right.
What if some imbecile translated part of the Bible that dealt with heaven and earth, and actually it should have been heavens and earth?
Well, any small slip or misinterpretation could have large meaning, but it probably wouldn't matter because there's already controversy about nearly everything that was written.
Yeah, well, that's the whole point. There's so many different ways to look at it. What if the Weekly World News is actually subsidized by the government?
The Weekly World News, if it's subsidized by the government, huh? Well, then the government would be doing to us what somebody suggested we do to the pollsters. A lot of people suspect that's what's being done anyway, right? East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, let me get my radio.
All right. Thank you.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Yeah, I was calling in regards to the servicemen that
refused to yield up their DNA, yes.
Yeah, well, I spent some time in the service, and I just called in to say that I wouldn't do it either.
You wouldn't?
No.
You would face a court-martial first, eh?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, in that case, my suggestion to you would be don't join the service.
I was already in for 8 years.
I see.
They didn't require me to do anything like that, but just certain things, I don't know, I just think are stepping over the line.
Well,
especially what can be done with it. The question is not whether or not, you know.
I was thinking the following. If they can determine, for example, a predisposition to aggressive tendencies and violence,
mm-hmm.
Out here in the civilian world, that would be considered a negative. Mm-hmm. But in the military, why, you might find people with a predisposition to being violent would be promoted faster than others.
Yeah.
Mm.
Hey, I had another question about something.
All right.
The other night, I think you mentioned something about a girl sent you a fax in regards to that comet hitting one of Mars's moons.
Phobos, yes.
Yes, man, I tried all night to get in touch with you. I was trying to call in for the very same reason. I remember that mentioning that comet.
Well, I'm going to get hold of him soon, but Gordon Michael Scallion has made a prediction that Phobos, the moon of Mars, one of the moons of Mars, will break from its orbit, which is in fact fairly tenuously tied to Mars, and head toward Earth's atmosphere. That would not be good.
No, what you ever heard of? You ever read any of literature on Nostradamus?
Oh yes.
Didn't he make some predictions about something in the Indian Ocean? A comet or a large asteroid, an explosion in the Indian Ocean?
I'm not really sure. That's one I'm not familiar with.
It's been a long time. About 8 years ago, I read two books. And some of the books were contradictory to each other, though.
Mm.
Some of his, I guess they called them quatrains.
Yes.
Yeah, the quatrains.
Well, they're like everything else, subject to interpretation.
Yeah, confusing.
Yes, very confusing. Thank you very much for the call. Now, you can rate the chances of Earth being hit by a comet or asteroid or some other piece of space junk. How would you rate those chances against the occurrence of something violent on April 19th, Friday? You don't have to be Nostradamus to look at this coming Friday and know there could be trouble. I'm getting these. In fact, I threw one away. I'm not even going to read it to you. From some militia about just horrible threatening stuff. And there's just a lot of nasty stuff going on out there right now. So it would not surprise me. I hope nothing happens, but I've got a feeling. That is an important date, and it's beginning to feel a little bit like a living in Israel, in this country. In Israel, people have to worry constantly about Katyusha rockets. They've got to worry about people who's strap explosives to themselves and set it off, suicide bombers. And we're not far from that here. So if something else occurs on April 19th, it's going to begin to mark this day as a day for terror in the U.S. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yes, hi, Art. I'm calling from Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Yes, sir.
Love your show.
Thank you.
Hey, I was going to ask you, haven't heard you mention this. I heard there was like this big power outage in your part of the country.
Amarillo.
Yes, and it's like on the news I heard. They said, well, it was like around Roswell, and I was wondering, did you hear what the cause for this was, possibly?
Yes, there was something involving a large substation.
Uh-huh.
And a saucer.
Okay, a saucer, would you say that? Did you say saucer?
Yeah, I sure heard a big silence on the other end of the line.
Yeah, I was kind of pausing to think there.
Yeah, no, I just threw that in.
Well, okay, you had
total to lie. It's it's like you're a pollster.
Yeah, well, it's just weird. They just said, it just went out all of a sudden, and then it came back on, and I thought, well, it's getting kind of close to arts territory out there.
Yeah, well, it's Amarillo, Texas, is where it occurred, and we're on the air there in Amarillo, so thank you very much. Let's see if we can get a call from Amarillo. Yes, there is a report about a gigantic power outage. I thought I would throw the saucer in for effect.
Now we take you back to the night of April 16th, 1996, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
First time caller line, you're on the air.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
I was reading through a Newsweek article on the Unabomber, and I just kind of came across something I thought was kind of amusing. They they want to try them in California or New Jersey, where you can get the death penalty.
Right.
I don't know. I guess I think they probably do have their guy, but geez, as far as seeking the death penalty for somebody like this,
why not? Let's look at when the death penalty should be applied.
Okay.
It should be applied when you have murder with malice and forethought, when it is premeditated. And if there ever was a case of premeditated murder, it is what the Unabomber did. I'm not saying Kaczynski because he is not convicted, but should he be, that is the clearest case of premeditated murder I've ever seen. Cold-blooded, too.
You've probably heard this. And why do we give people the death penalty? Why do we kill them? To prove one thing, the killing people is wrong.
No, that isn't why we have the death penalty.
Well, that's kind of the way it ends up looking to me.
We have it to prove that killing people is wrong. No, I don't think so. I think we have it for a sense of justice.
I don't know. It just comes across to me as being a mixed message.
All right. Well, I thank you for your call. I've thought long and deeply about the death penalty. And it seems to me that if, under those conditions, you take life, then it is appropriate that your life be taken. I'd rather live under most circumstances, wouldn't you? I've said this before, a life in jail, not perfect, but always at least the hope of escape, the hope of somebody letting you out when you get old and gray. And between now and then, at least you have a life. Watch TV, read books, do whatever you would do in jail. A better than death? I think so. So is death a more serious punishment than life? For me, it would be, right now. I suppose there are some who want to die. You know, they've done something and they want to die. Generally, as a matter of fact, those are about the only ones to which we apply the death penalty. Those who refuse to go through the long series of appeals and all the rest of it. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Far out.
Yeah, far out, way far out, all over the world.
Hard. Hey, this is Jerry from Bakersfield.
Yes.
Yes, I've been trying real hard the last couple days, and I haven't got a chance to hear that Bigfoot fact you've been talking about.
Well, I hate to read it again. I've gone over it so many times now. It is a man who believes he shot Bigfoot, would be willing to tell us where it is buried, actually two of them. But he wants, before he'll do it, money for his defense, should he be charged with murder.
Well, it sounds pretty interesting. Are you going to play it again sometime in the future here, maybe on Dreamline next week?
Correct.
All right. Well,
all right.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. My feeling is he may only listen to Dreamland. Not everybody can go for all-night talk radio. So, you know, I don't even know where this occurred. There's no hint of it in the facts. And I have no way of knowing what time zone. He may be Eastern. That would make it 3 hours. Wait a minute. Maybe he did say in the facts. Let's see. No, he really didn't. He sure didn't. So it could be as far away as the East Coast, which would make it coming up on 3 o'clock in the morning. Now, west of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Is this Art Bell Show?
Good guess.
Oh, thanks.
You're welcome.
I just have one comment on the two Marines that were court-martialed.
Being court-martialed, yes.
On being court-martialed, they were found guilty.
Well, I don't have that information.
They came out on CNN about an hour ago.
Okay. Well, of course, they did disobey a lawful order, so I expected that.
They were sentenced to 1 week restriction on base and a letter of reprimand.
Hmm. Well, that's not so bad.
No, but my question is, do they still have to submit their sample?
I don't know. Maybe they will be again issued a lawful order to do so, and they'll face a more serious penalty if they don't obey the second time. I can't imagine the military would just drop it, and I would imagine ultimately that if they don't yield up the sample requested, that they will simply be, for the convenience of the military, given their walking papers. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Bell. You got the word answer for 92 out here in Portland, Oregon.
Yes, sir.
I'd first like to tell everybody it's pronounced Oregon, not Oregon. Kind of getting sick of that. But listening to you relay that fact, I think it might be trash. It's kind of hard to shoot something at nighttime at 100 yards unless you have open sight.
Well, now, wait a minute. This was the next day.
Well, at first he shot it at night.
That is correct.
They were spotlighting deer.
Yeah.
And so I figure, not that I've ever spotlighted deer, but I have night hunted, that he probably, let me turn that down a second, sorry about that, that he probably is kidding, because unless they have open open sights on the rifle and not a scope, it's going to be pretty hard to pick something out. And then the next day when he was saying he went into a plum thicket, it was like 50 yards, I believe you said, he said.
All right.
And if it's going to be real thick to where he's going to crawl on his belly, his buddies out in the open from 50 yards, they're not going to be able to have that clear of a shot to shoot the, you know, other female in the head, I believe.
Well, I don't know how tall the thicket was, because the female was very tall. So
yeah, that's
maybe
what you're saying.
Yeah, so maybe she stood up above it. When she stood up, he said he shot, and she stood up at that point.
Okay, that could be. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt. I was just kind
I don't
of
know. I mean, who knows? You know, it's just
there.
Yeah, it's just an interesting fact. But I got no response today. So I think the odds are pretty good that whoever this is listens on Sunday.
Well, I got my own business, so I'll kick in. I live out here in Portland. I can get a hold of the Bigfoot Research Center, and I'll kick in a grand there. Somebody, you know, I'll challenge anybody out there to kick in some money so we can go ahead and prove this once and for all.
Well, they are already offering, based tentatively on some confirmation of what's in here, to help this person out. So, you know, if that was his requirement, then we have met it. And so we'll see what happens.
Okay. Well, right. Keep up the good work, Mr. Bell. And
thank you.
Talk to you later.
All right. We'll see. I really do understand why this person would feel that way. And it's one of the aspects that made me lean toward believing the facts. Was that he would have a natural fear of being charged with murder. The only part of it that doesn't make any sense to me is, if this was a biped creature walking on 2 feet, at 100 yards, in bad lighting, why would you shoot at anything on 2 feet? How would you see enough of it to be sure that you were not shooting a human being? And if it was on 2 feet, I would think the automatic assumption at that distance would be that it might be a human being. And so you would certainly err on the side of caution and not take your shot. That's the one aspect of it that bothers me. But, you know, who knows? I mean, really, who knows? Anyway, we'll see. We'll see if we're contacted. In the meantime, anything you want to talk about is fair game as we unfold talk radio like a freight train running through the night. More in a moment.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight, featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 16th, 1996. Presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired April 16th, 1996.
Once again, here I am. Well, folks, you're not going to believe this. But I have on the phone the author of the facts about Bigfoot. He's on the phone with me. And I had to talk very hard to try and get him to say a word or two on the air, and he's going to. You may recall the facts. For those that don't, I'm going to read it. I'm going to read the facts, and then we're going to go and say a couple of words to this man. And I am dying, as you are, of curiosity. Dear Art Bell, I know where two Bigfoots are buried. In 1973, two friends and myself were out hunting at night using spotlights. Came across one Bigfoot in an open field. He was about 100 yards away. Two of us shot and dropped him. He got up, we fired again. He went down a second time. He got up again and started for the river. This time he was about 250 yards out. We fired again, hit him, but he did not drop. The next morning, we returned to the area and started to track him. It was easy since there was a lot of blood. We followed him down the river for about a half mile, came up on a large wild plum thicket. The blood trail went in there. We flipped a coin and the odd man went in. It was December, there were no leaves. I crawled in on my stomach, and about 50 feet in, that's 50 feet, I met with the female. Thank God for the 44 Magnum, it took three shots to bring her down. Each time I fired, she went backwards. She stood up, and my two buddies each fired, hitting her in the head. That was the end of it. We found the male dead in the thicket. Female had the same body as that of a human, sex organ, breast, and so forth. Male had the same type of organs as a human. The difference, though, was that of the face that looked like a cross between a human and ape. The male was about 7.5 feet tall. His weight about 350 pounds. The female, 7 feet tall and 300 pounds. Since they looked so human, we decided to bury them. We felt that we might get charged with murder. All three Vietnam vets were snipers, so we knew what we were doing. We took 10 Polaroid photographs, pictures. If you want to talk to me, then I will fax you my number. Just say the word bugs, and I will fax the number to you. If I agree to show you where they are, and if I need an attorney, your company will pay the bill. That is the only way. Well, while my company is certainly not prepared to foot the bill, the Bigfoot Society has indicated that with the right conditions, they are. They'll help. They have money. They have resources. They have helicopters. They're very serious about what they're doing with regard to Bigfoot. Now, I just, during this last break, got a simple fax with a way to contact somebody with the pseudonym of Bugs. He's on the phone right now. And here he is from an undisclosed location. We'll just leave it at that. I don't even right now want to know where you are. But I do want to say thank you for getting back to me.
You're welcome.
I was afraid that you only listened on Sunday evenings and that you wouldn't be up this late.
Well, I was already asleep. My wife was listening to you, and she woke me up.
Woke you up, eh? All right. There's a lot of confusion. People misheard the fact. Some people thought it was 50 yards in that you crawled. It wasn't. It was about, according to the facts, 50 feet, correct?
Right.
Now,
this thicket was, I would say, about 50 feet wide by 100, 150 feet long.
Hmm.
It was in a draw or ravine or whatever you want to call it. And it you could not see down into it, but there was no leaves, so you could see what was in front of you.
All right, let me take you back before this, if I can. The only part, and you may have heard me or your wife may have heard me mention this, that I had a hard time was that the first shots that were taken apparently were taken at night from about 100 yards.
Right.
And I take it what you had in your sights was a biped of some sort up on two legs, right?
Right, right. Well, when we first seen what it was, we seen the eyes. It was basically reddish. At first, we thought it could be a deer. The eyes were similar. And as we got closer, it was probably, I assumed it was in a crouch or kneeling position. And as we got closer, we came around a bend in the road that went into this flat area that run alongside the river, and it was a plowed field. And we were able to see, as we got closer, when we hit the lights, the pickup lights hit it first, brought the spotlights on it. We're using 500,000 candle watt quartz beam lights.
Wow.
We back in 1973, we did this basically professionally because we were hunting coyotes, bobcats, coons, that sort of thing, because they were bringing a lot of money.
I've got you.
And as we come around, like I said, when the lights first hit it, we thought that it was a deer with the eyes. And as we got closer, we could see it was something crouched. And we, when we stopped the pickup, it stood up.
All right, so at first it was crouched down on all fours.
I wouldn't say it was on all fours.
Or you mean kind of crouched down like you...
kneeling or something.
All right, I've got you. Mm-hmm. And so then, as you got closer, it reared up. It got up.
Right. And
how much detail could you make out of this thing?
At the point when we throw the scopes on it, we could tell what it was. I mean, there was no doubt in our mind. Bird Dog and myself both knew immediately what it was. That it was a Bigfoot because the hair, the outline, the human form. But it was so hard to, the excitement, the adrenaline at that point was pumping like you wouldn't believe.
No, I believe it.
And I laid my rifle out my window, and he come across the top of the cab with his. And we both fired simultaneously. I mean, that's the way we did it when we hit coats. Whichever one inside, one of us fire out the driver's side or the window, and the other one come across the cab, and we both fired. And we fired instantly. He was using a 300 Weatherby, which is 300 Magnum. Mm-hmm. I was using a 243.
Okay.
He was shooting, I believe, either 280, I believe it was a 280-grain bullet, and I was firing a 125-grain bullet. And we both fired. He fell over. I mean, it just like... not really fell over, like he was knocked over. I'm assuming the 300 is what did that. We thought he was down. Has he come back up?
Okay, I'm not an expert with guns. I know something about them, but I take it these are of a caliber and velocity that would bring down any normal animal. Right?
Would 300 bring anything down in the northern United States and North America?
Okay.
The 243, no, it's not. It's more of a varmint weapon.
All right.
But the 300, I mean, you could probably bring down an elephant with it.
Okay.
It's probably the most powerful rifle there is in this part of the world outside of an elephant gun. And the animal got up, stood on its hind feet, started to run away from us. And we fired again and again. It was just like something pushed him down. We knocked him down. And again, we thought he wasn't going to get up. And we opened our doors. I did, and stepped outside. And Bird Dog come around the front. And he jumped up and he took off again. And this is when we fired the third time. And we hit him again because he kind of lurched forward, but he was far enough out that he went across. He hit the fence and it just rolled across the fence, and he got down into the river there, and he was gone.
Now, this was all at about what time of night?
I would say probably about 2:30.
2:30 in the morning. All right. Mm-hmm. So that was at the end of what occurred that night.
Right. We didn't do any more looking for him that night because, you know, this thing is bigger than both of us put together nearly.
Yeah, I wouldn't go in there.
And we knew that he was hit. We knew that he was hit bad. And so...
you figured he wouldn't go very far.
No, he's not going to go very far.
So...
I mean, been hit at least three times by both weapons. He's not going very far.
Right. And he didn't. You came back when the next day, roughly?
Oh, we... actually, we didn't even go to sleep. We just kind of drove around until sunlight.
I see.
And I would say probably, 7:30, 8, we arrived back over there. We picked up the blood trail. Bird Dog was a tracker in Vietnam. It was very easy for him to follow the trail. And we went down Oh, I imagine about a half a mile, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Come up on the thicket. And that was when we went in after it.
All right. You're the guy, you flipped a coin to see who would go in odd man out, right?
Yeah, I never was very lucky.
So in you go with a 44 Magnum.
Right.
And you got about 50 feet in and found what?
Well, as I was going in, I was scared, to be honest with you. But I just, you know, I never suspected two of them. I got in, and the sound that this thing made as it come up at me.
What was that sound? You've heard me play, I assume. That...
Nothing like what you play.
Nothing like what I play.
Nothing like. It was more of a scream.
A scream.
I mean, a woman can't scream the squealing sound the way this thing screamed. And it just put chills down your spine. But I seen it move. I seen it coming toward me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on all fours coming toward me. And I fired. And the 44, I'm shooting a 240 grain hollow point with an overcharge. Literally knocked that thing back about 3 or 4 feet. It got up and it come after me again. And I fired again. It did it 3 times that away. And the 4th time, it stood completely up. And when it did, Bird Dog and my other buddy cut loose on it, and they went through the head.
All right, I take it the thicket was low enough so that when this creature stood up all the way, it was standing high enough so they could get a shot at it.
Right, right. They're probably a plum thicket. I imagine probably 5-6 foot tall.
Okay.
And, something to that extent. Well, it dropped and didn't make no more sounds, and I got closer and I seen it wasn't breathing, so it was. Yeah, I knew it was gone. And about another probably 10 foot on the other side of it, I seen the other one laying there. And so it took all three of us to drag them out. They were that heavy. And then when we examined them, we got scared because the organs, everything, it was just like a human body with hair on it.
Oh, that was going to be my question. It was covered with hair?
Right. Had a kind of a brownish-red hair.
Brownish-red. And you estimated the weight, I think, the male about 350 pounds, the female about 300, huh?
Something in that neighborhood.
And both of them over 7 feet.
At least. They were. I can promise you that they were at least 7 foot tall. They could have even been taller.
No clothing, right?
No clothing.
The head looking half human?
I don't know how to really explain it.
Best you can.
It had a nose similar to a human's nose, but the mouth similar to an ape. The eyes, half human, half ape looking. It had a large, protruding type forehead.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas ours, you know, kind of comes almost down on your eyes. This one hung probably half an inch or so out, more so than ours would.
Did it have a neck?
Short neck.
Very short, huh?
Probably, if I remember right, maybe 3 inches.
That's not much of a neck.
I'll tell you the best way to describe the way they look from the backside. You've seen weightlifters where they don't have no neck and it just goes all up into muscles.
Yeah, sure.
That's the way it looked.
No, like a no-necked NFL player.
Right, right.
Well, look, I can imagine your fear. I mean, what did you guys do when you finally got the bodies? You dragged them out. You looked at them. What was the conversation like?
Well, we started talking about, what are we going to do? Should we notify somebody, or should we bury these suckers, or what?
Right.
And we finally come to the conclusion that we might go to prison. And so we decided, hey, let's put these suckers in a hole. And we buried them and then covered it where nobody'd ever know they'd been buried there.
All right. Well, I'm not an attorney, but from what you've told me, you didn't commit murder. I mean, you were hunting, and clearly, I think, if your description is even close to accurate, you did not kill what we think of as human beings. Let me ask you to stay put for just a minute. I've got commercial things I must do. And so without identifying the person, other than to say, this is Bugs. We'll be back in just one moment.
If you happen to hear something on the show last night or last week, did you know that all the guest information and show information is available online at www.coasttocoastam.com? Our webmaster, Lex, has posted everything right down to the bumper music. Also on the website is a service called Streamlink. Man, is this great. For about 15 cents a day, you can have access to live streaming audio no matter where you are, as long as you're close to a computer. You'll also get archived shows from the last 90 days, and you can hear the show on your computer anytime you wish. Plus, you'll have access to my Tuesday night chats. That's once a month. So get the inside story on the show and the inside story on what's going on with Coast to Coast AM. You simply log on to coasttocoastam.com. That's coasttocoastam.com, and you'll be glad you did. Streamlink, it's a great service. It's private. You even get a private email address directly to me. So just log on to coasttocoastam.com and read all about it.
Now we take you back to the night of April 16th, 1996 on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Back now to somebody identified only as Bugs. All right, Bugs. So you guys, you sat around, you talked about it, you figured, look, we could get charged with something. Let's bury our mistake, I guess, or bury our... Did you consider it a mistake at that point?
I don't know what I considered it. I just... being cautious is more than anything. We didn't know what would happen or what would go on, and it was just better that we just bury it. We took photographs.
Oh, that's the other question. You took, it says here, 10 Polaroid photographs.
Right.
Do you have those?
I don't have my three. They burned in my house, burned in 1979. My friends still have theirs.
All right.
So there's still seven photographs out there somewhere.
Uh-huh. So you feel you could return to the area, the site where these creatures are buried?
I know exactly where they're buried.
Your only request is that you would have assistance if it came to legal trouble, is that correct?
Well, I don't want to go to jail.
Well, it's been a long time. You're coming forward now. What made you decide to come forward? I mean, halfway
for it. I never told no one except my wife, and I told her about this probably a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the basic reason, I used to own every kind of weapon there was.
Mm-hmm.
Been an ex-Marine, you know, what the heck. But after that happened, I don't even own a weapon anymore. It did something to me.
That makes sense.
And I don't know, I was listening to y'all talking the other night, and everybody was kind of laughing about, you know, Bigfoot. Hey, it's real, buddy.
All right, look, here's what I propose to do. I will, with your permission, get you a telephone number that you can call if you want to. Now, I'm the only one who knows how to get hold of you right now.
And keep it that way.
And I'll keep it that way, I promise. What I will do is I'll contact the people at the Bigfoot Project, and if you want to proceed, I will then give you their number, and you can call them and take it a step at a time with them. How does that sound?
Well, that sounds fine, but I'll tell you, I still have to talk to my other two friends. They no longer live here. One of them, let's put it this way. If I told you where the other one is.
Yeah, don't tell me.
But they no longer live in this town.
Well, if you know how to contact them, why don't you go ahead and do that and see if they feel the same way you do or not. And we'll proceed from there, Bugs.
But it'll have to be unanimous with all of us. All three of us will have to agree to it.
I understand. I appreciate your coming forward. I'm sure you'll hear some comment about it, and I appreciate your telling the story. So all I can tell you is I will protect you.
I will tell you this much, Art. The day I die, I will have a map where it's at.
So well, maybe
I'm 50,
we'll...
I'm 51 years old now. So it's not going to last forever.
All right, sir. I've got to take off. Thank you very much, Bugs.
You're welcome.
Get a good night's sleep. If you can. Well, there. Surprise, surprise, surprise.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight, featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 16th, 1996. To Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from April 16th, 1996.
It is. Here I go again, right in the middle of it. Man, wasn't that something? Well, listen, I took the opportunity to talk to somebody during the break who knows about shooters, hunters, and, he said what you just heard was a real McCoy. I'm not a hunter. I'm not a significant shooter. I know how to shoot. I've done a fair amount of it, but I don't hunt. I've never hunted, ever since I killed a squirrel when I was very young. But I think what you just heard was real. I thought the facts was real, and I thought what you just heard was real. So I don't know. That puts me seriously in the middle, but a promise is a promise. So I'll proceed exactly as I said I would. I don't know. What do you guys think? There are many of you out there, I know, who are far more familiar with hunters. And you listened to the story, as I did. What were your impressions? What have we got on our hands here? How would you proceed? Whew. Talk radio. Man, oh man. Incidentally, while we're on the subject of talk radio, a piece of news just came in from the wire service. I think it's probably Associated Press. And I'll read it to you as is. A man has been arrested for allegedly threatening radio personality Howard Stern. Police in New York say Samuel, it's C-A-L-L-E-A, of Buffalo, New York, was waiting when Stern arrived this morning to do his radio program. He allegedly shouted, quote, "I'm going to kick your ass. I'm going to kill you," end quote. Stern's bodyguards, didn't know he had those, asked the person if he had a weapon. Police say he replied, "Yeah, got a shotgun in the trunk of my car." The bodyguards called police, who arrested the man and issued him a summons charging weapons possession and criminal trespass. So Howard had a bit of a scare, I guess, today. Thought I'd pass that on. Talk radio is a strange, strange medium. And it's the kind of place where anything can happen, as was just demonstrated. I don't know, you tell me. What do you think we've got here? First time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, hi Art. This is Mark in Seattle.
Hi Mark.
I had a question for you about your Cusco bumper music.
Yes.
There's a piece you've been playing for about the last 2.5 years I've been listening to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts out with a pounding drum beat, and it's not the one that was just on. And I was wondering...
Oh, yes, uh-huh.
If you could tell me what the name of that one was.
And Africa.
Pardon me?
It's called Africa.
Africa. And which of the albums is that on?
I can't remember.
Okay.
But it's called Africa, so obviously if you go into a music store and look through the albums, that's
right.
What you look for.
Okay, thanks, Art.
All right, thank you, sir. It might be, Primack 2. That's just a kind of an off-the-hip guess. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, this is Ron in Montana.
Hello, Ron.
I got a couple questions.
Yes, sir.
My understanding on this guy with the Bigfoot issue is they were out at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
When they first saw this. Why are they hunting at 2 o'clock in the morning?
Well, they were hunting for money.
Oh.
They were actually out killing for money. If you listen, did you listen to it?
I was getting bits and pieces of it.
Okay.
So my station drifts in and out.
Oh, I see, I see. How did the tone of the story sound to you?
Well, it sounded realistic. I guess I'm just concerned with the responsibility of these hunters. Shooting at something that they haven't identified kind of gives sportsmen a bad name.
Well, if you were out in the woods and you saw something down on its haunches and it was gigantic and hairy, I guess based on that much, I mean, that's not a human being in your estimation. So, you know, I don't know what to think here, and I'm not sure how to proceed, but it sounds to me like they may have shot two Bigfoot.
Well, that's the impression I got. I guess I just don't see it as being very responsible sportsmen out there shooting at something that you haven't identified. It didn't sound like it was being a threat to them at the time.
Well, look, a lot of sportsmen. Yeah, but sir, wait a minute. A lot of sportsmen take down game that is not a threat to them.
But they usually have a license about what they're shooting at.
Yeah. Well, all of that aside, I mean that is fine. Not responsible, and maybe not. I don't know. But I would think that if you saw something that was fully hairy, that your presumption, without clothes, your presumption certainly would be that it was not a human being. And I'm not going to sit here and defend the morality of taking a shot, or, you know, of his taking the shot, nor am I going to criticize it. What I wanted to get mostly now from y'all is a sense of the story. In other words, did you believe it? I happen to think it's true. I believe it. I think we've got somebody here who took down a couple of Bigfoot. Or something like a Bigfoot. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
I was listening to the story about the guy with supposedly shot Bigfoot.
Yeah.
And with a couple.
Yep.
And I do believe him because my father used to travel a lot. He was a truck driver. And he had told me one time that he thought there was an animal on the side of the road, which he thought was a deer, that was crouched down. He's seen the eyes, you know, like a deer with the headlights would hit the eyes. And then it got up and walked on its 2 feet, and it was around 7 foot tall. And matter of fact, from that day on, he was an avid Bigfoot fan. I mean, he, you know, bought magazines and researched on his own a lot.
Sure. It would drive you to that, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. The story just unfolded correctly, I thought. You know, I'm not a hunter, so I can't judge that aspect of it.
Well, I'm not a hunter either, but if you shot something like that that was close to human, half human, and reasonably half ape, you would probably react the same way they did, too. I would think I'd be scared to death. I'd probably bury the thing, too.
I know. That's what I said the other night.
And coming forward, he has to prove himself now.
Well, no, that's...
He follows up on it.
No, that's right. Thank you very much for the call. That's exactly right, and I might have done the same thing. And I might have taken the shot, too. I don't know. I'm not a hunter. I guess I wouldn't have, because I wouldn't be out there hunting. But I don't know. To me, the story had, you know, layman me, it had the ring of truth to it. Now, what I would like to hear from is some hunters. I mean, you guys speak the language. Was this guy, did he seem to be on the level to you? Sure does make me feel in the middle of this. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello?
Hello.
Is this?
Who are you expecting?
Art Bell?
Bingo.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Turn your radio off.
I already turned it off, sir.
That's good.
I'd never believe I would get on the air.
Well?
I've been listening to your show for like about 6 months, and I think you're a real good announcer. About the Bigfoot, are you guys still talking about that?
Whatever you want, sir.
Oh, okay. Well, I believe that guy compared to that other guy that talked about that story about UFOs.
I beg your pardon?
Yeah, but a couple nights ago, I'm a little bit excited, though. This is first.
Call toll-free 1-800-618-8255.
No, no, no. You're not allowed to use your last name on the air.
Oh, I'm not? Oh, okay.
So I just had to take all that out. Let's start again. Your name is Joe?
Yeah.
All right, Joe. That's all we need is just your first name.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
Anyway, you listened to the story that man told, didn't you?
Yeah.
And?
Well, I think it's 100% believable.
You do, huh?
Yeah.
Have you ever done any hunting?
No, but I got a friend that does, and I'm going to tell him about it. I'm going to tell him about it tomorrow.
All right. All right. Thank you very much. We'll look forward to that. I want to hear from some hunters. That's one of the only ways I can quantify this story. I'm just a layperson in this area, and to me, it sounded legit. But I'd like to hear from some hunters. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Oh. My name's Paul.
Hi, Paul.
And I'd like to read you something here.
Read me? Please don't. What is a concern?
Oh, well, it's civil rights.
Civil rights?
Yeah.
You want to read us our civil rights?
Well, it's kind of like it's a law that enforces our civil rights.
It's a law that enforces our civil rights?
Yeah.
Why would you want to read this to us?
Well, let the people know that they have
civil rights.
Right to enforce a law that will keep people from taking their civil rights.
A law that will... I thought that was the Bill of Rights.
Well, true, but this is out of the law books, Crime and Punishment.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you very much, but we don't read on the air. If you want to have a discussion about something, you're welcome to do it, but I have found generally... Oh, when people read on the air, it just doesn't work out. I think most people are aware of what rights they have. As a matter of fact, people are very aware of the rights they have. Not so aware of the responsibilities that should come with them. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Art, how you doing?
I'm okay.
I got a little complaint here. I don't think you was on Sunday night here. I'm in Seattle. This is Jim.
Well, Jim, when they have sports or something else, it offsets it. So that happens.
You was on here, but it was a rerun.
A rerun of what?
Of one of your old shows. Plus, you're on two stations at the same time. It's real confusing.
We know. We're on KVI and Como.
Yeah.
Well, at 1 o'clock in the morning during the week, we switch over to Como.
I think you start at 11 o'clock on both channels, don't you?
Well, maybe that's right. No, maybe they have changed that. I'm not exactly sure. Thank you very much. No, I think it was live. When we are live, they carry us live. And then, of course, on the weekends, there are some repeats. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Art.
Yes.
Thoroughly enjoyed your book.
I beg your pardon? Oh, my book. You liked it, huh?
Yeah, I did.
Good. I'm glad.
Oh. It's the new Mother Nature. She's taken over.
What's the new Mother Nature?
The one that's going to get us all.
Going to get us all?
Yeah.
Doomsday?
No, long time for that.
The end of the line?
We got a long time for that.
Oh, good.
We're all worrying for nothing.
All right. Thank you. Strange. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello. Art?
Yes.
Oh, sorry about that. Just wanted to call about this Bigfoot thing.
What do you think?
Well, I have a hard time believing. I have to agree with the gentleman who called in and said it was giving sportsmen a bad name shooting what they weren't sure they were at.
Yeah, but that is not the issue. The issue is whether or not.
Well, I mean, that's what's putting doubt in my mind. If these all are the hunters they claim to be. I don't believe they would have shot somebody without identifying it first. So that throws the
Wait a minute now. He did identify it to the degree that it was in a crouch. It had a totally hairy body and didn't look fully human. Now, that's pretty animal-like.
Okay, well, I came into the story late, so if you could maybe clarify.
Oh, I see. So you didn't hear it.
Yeah, if you could maybe clarify one. I heard the last part of his call.
Oh, all right. Well, then thank you for the call, but obviously you're not going to be able to reasonably comment on it. I swear I'd play it back if I have the ability to do that. I should have recorded it so I could do exactly that. Darn. Well, we do have it, of course, at the network, and it could be played back from there, but not tonight as the recording continues. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi. Hi. This is Mike from Flint.
Hello, Mike.
Michigan.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to reserve comment on the Bigfoot thing until I hear a little more. But I was calling. This is kind of a strange story that I read in one of the, one of the tabloids, but it was sort of off the wall that it there is an element of truth to it, I think, because it involves were you familiar with the 60s rock band Iron Butterfly?
Sure.
I don't know if maybe some of your listeners have heard this, but like their bass player, after the group broke up or, you know, whatever, was some sort of like a computer wizard, you know, and evidently just a couple of years ago, I mean, I guess he made quite a decent amount of money. A couple of years ago, according to this article, he worked out some sort of program on this computer, some sort of big deal. They didn't really explain it too well. I'm hoping maybe somebody out there will know. But evidently it involved faster than light communication, which is pretty bizarre. You know, faster than light, anything is pretty bizarre. But the guy is missing. That was the main crux of the story, was that he was missing.
Vanished? A victim of his own new calculations, perhaps?
Possibly. He left a message on his phone machine saying that he was going to kill himself. But,
uh-oh.
So maybe, I don't know if he ever turned up somewhere.
Nobody has found the body.
What's that?
I said nobody has found the body.
No, like I said, he may have even just came up not missing anymore. I was wondering maybe somebody out there knows a little more about this than I.
All right, weird story. We'll check it out with some others. Thank you. I have no idea. Interesting concept, faster than light communications. Accomplished with something that communicates roughly at the speed of light or just below it. Huh. I wonder if there would be a way to accomplish that through computation. Not as wild as you might imagine. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning. This is Sky in New Orleans.
Hello, Sky.
I'm going to call for input on the... for bugs.
Yeah.
I find it more believable than not, by what margin, I'm not sure, and I'll tell you why. One, I myself am a hunter. I've been a sniper before also. He did sound to know exactly what he was talking about as far as the firearms, especially when he was speaking about the 300. That is definitely something that can, you know, reach out and touch someone.
Mm-hmm.
The way he, you know, described everything and... just, you know, what weapons, you know, we're doing to the creature, would make sense. And just, I don't know, just the sound of his voice, like it was an actual experience.
Yeah, I know. It hit me that way, too.
There's something else that also, you know, if I don't know if you can allow the time for this. I've tried to get through before with your Halloween show or Truth or Trash. But a related story is, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Falk Monster or the Honey Island Swamp Monster down in this area.
No, I haven't. I'll tell you what, though. I will put you on hold, all right?
Okay.
And you're going to have to sit for a while. Just relax. Let me do a little work here, and we'll get to those stories.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from April 16th, 1996.
All right, monsters. Now, this came from a tabloid of some kind?
No, not a tabloid.
No?
There's a long time been floating around stories about what is called the Honey Island Swamp Monster.
What is it?
Well, the
By the way, is your radio on, sir?
Oh, I'm sorry. I did turn it back on during the rebreak.
Turn it off.
It is off.
All right. What is this monster?
There's been numerous reportings, which is basically a Bigfoot-type creature. With an incredibly foul stench. And the Honey Island Swamp is right along the border of Louisiana-Mississippi area.
Okay.
In the Pearl River area. And like I said, for several years, you hear different stories coming through about people, you know, hunters, trappers, people out crawfishing or what have you, coming across creatures that look, you know, basically a Bigfoot-type description.
Mm-hmm.
And the same came from the Falk area of Arkansas, which is in the lower, well, the southwest corner around the Texarkana area.
Right.
And what has been strange, some people have reported coming across footprints, oddly enough, with a three-toe signature instead of, you know, a normal five-toe, which has always been associated with the Bigfoot. But like I say, there have been different stories floating around the swamp areas.
Yeah, there have been so many reports that I am fairly convinced there is something out there. This man's story that I heard a little while ago, what did you think of it, sir?
Well, like I say, if I had to guess, I would say, you know, 60%, you know, maybe a little better, more believable than not.
Than not. All right, I would agree with that. Thank you very, very much for the call, and that's, I guess, my assessment, too. About 60% or a little better. In other words, I lean toward believing it. Amazing as it is. I'm really glad he called. I'm glad that you all got to hear it. I don't know that I'm glad I'm in the middle of this right now because I think I believe it. We'll be right back.
What will you do when you're lonely? No one waiting by your side.
Listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 16th, 1996.
Well, good morning. We've had something occur on the show program this evening. The man who sent me the facts on Sunday about shooting of the Bigfoot, plural to him, contacted me tonight by fax, and I put him on the air from 12 midnight Pacific time until 12:30. He told the story on the air in significant detail. I've had a couple of people in doubt about the bullet weights, but I've also talked to a couple of hunters who say, no, he was exactly right. And I've got a number of faxes here. This was a significant occurrence, and it's kind of put me in the middle here. From Bob, I won't give the last name, a retired Border Patrol supervisor, Art. I've been listening to Bugs, that's his pseudoname, with interest for the last few minutes, and I think the guy is telling the truth. I will bet he can produce some photos and take you to the graves. Wow, what a find. Or this, hi Art, well this certainly sounds like the real deal. Now, once and for all, we're going to be able to put a stop to the myth about the Bigfoot. I'm happy and sad, all in the same mood. Yes, I believe the fellow. But I have an awful feeling deep down in my guts about this. You know the feeling. The one where you know that you have done something terribly wrong. Signed, Greenwood Charlie. Art, you should request your Bigfoot person to at least send you one or two of the remaining seven Polaroids. If they were taken some 20 or so years ago, I'm sure the photos could be dated as being taken from Polaroid film available during that period, just as the alien autopsy film was analyzed. Even if the individuals won't come forward, the photographs and their verification would be very impressive. Yes, I agree. Or this, I believe we've got a very credible story here. Bugs mentioned photographs. Art, you need to get them to send you a couple so we can get our opinions more solidified through your eyes. I see no harm to this man if he submits photos to you for further proof. So there you are. Dear Art, Bugs sounded sincere. What really sounds correct is that the hunter would take down a Bigfoot rather than trying to capture it. This is exactly the same thing that you have commented about aliens. If these hunters had encountered an alien, they would have taken the same action. A sorry comment about mankind. Dear Art, the calibers Bug mentioned are real. I've owned them both. The story he told, believable. Believable to me because there was something in his voice that is exactly how I feel myself about killing anything after years past, being an avid hunter. Or this from a physician, I will not give his name, Thomas, a medical doctor. Ballistically, Bugs describes accurately the reactions of a large wild animal to the energy of the various bullet hits to the creatures. So, I'm sorry if you did not get to hear it. It was an amazing half hour. I kind of feel in the middle of it now, very much in the middle of it. And it would have been a lot easier in a lot of ways had it not been so apparently realistic. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Art. This is the Italian Stallion. Boy, is it raining down there?
No, it's the wind is screaming, though.
Boy, I just hate to say you're just so wet tonight on this story, and these people are so naive. I mean, you're talking to a person that has a dream to have an expedition and go hunt Bigfoot and write books and stuff, and right now I don't have the funds, but I can tell you this much. Okay, the guy knew a lot about guns and stuff. I reload myself, and I know instead he ballistics and stuff. Okay, so what? Yeah, he shot at it with a .243 and a .300 Weatherby. I mean, I wouldn't shoot anything that was like a beast with the .240.
Well, that's what they had there, I guess. I mean, they were hunting various game, if you heard his explanation, for profit. And so that happened to be what they had on hand. I don't find that, I don't find it unusual that there would be different caliber weapons on hand, frankly. Wild Card Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, Art.
Hello.
I tuned in after the show was on, about 12:40 was when I tuned in, but I had an experience up in Northern California with a friend of mine. We're headed up to Reno and about Bigfoot, and I just wondered if you might be interested in hearing it. And
Briefly, yeah, sure.
Okay, well, we were on our way to Reno. We're up by Mount Shasta, about 25 miles out in the woods. By the way, I contacted Ray Crow and told him my story, and he believed me. And we stopped to rest, and we got up and started to walk around, looking around in the forest and stuff, and there's like an old fence up there. We saw a long strand of hair. It's probably 2 feet long. And we took that and said, oh, this must be an elk or something like that, up here, a horse or something like that. And so we discarded it, and we went back into Mount Shasta to talk to some people at the store and get some groceries and things, and they told us that there was no elk, and up in that area there's no horses or anything that are ridden up there. It was a real dense forest up there, and we wish we could have kept that hair, and we just, you know, threw it out the window as we were going back to Mount Shasta laughing about it, thought it was probably just horse hair. And they said no, but there have been sightings of Bigfoot up there. And we heard some noises down in the brush, so we went down to investigate during that time. And it was like a grunting sound. And we went down in there, and it would move away from us. And when we come back up to the car, just before we left, it was right back in the same area, making sort of like big, heavy grunt noises. And you know, by that time, we said, we're just going to get in the car and get out of here. This is too weird. But that's the only encounter I've ever had with something that could have been Bigfoot. But
well, what did you think? Oh, you say you didn't hear the story.
No, I didn't get a chance to hear
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's really a shame. All right, well, what we may do is we'll pull that half hour in the morning after the program and prep it and perhaps repeat it for you tomorrow night somewhere in this hour. So I can be sure that everybody has heard it. I think that what you heard was a significant occurrence. That's my take on it. And if I were a betting man, and I don't think I would put money on this one way or the other, but if I did, I would bet it was a real thing, and I would bet this man could lead us to those graves. That's what I think. You know, that's just, it's just a feeling. I mean, I listened to his story, and I thought I was impressed by it. I thought it was real. As I thought the facts was real, I think the rendition we got on the air was added to my impression that what we're hearing is real. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. Hello there. I guess we missed him. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, this is Herb from Neltina, Alaska.
Boy, all of a sudden Alaska's in here hot and heavy. Yes, sir.
Well, you know, I've been listening to this thing on Bigfoot all night, and it's really intriguing. And I'm a retired big game hunting guide and lived in Alaska a long time. And I find a few things wrong with Bugs' story as you related it over the air tonight. But I think that the passage of time, you know, it has went over these different bullet weights
yeah.
and everything.
Well, I thought that was
you know, anybody in 20 years can get turned around on that, especially if they're not real experts at reloading and things like that. My only question with the whole deal is that, you know, over the past 30 years or so, 30, 35 years, there's been a number of sightings and a lot of publicity on these Bigfoot and abominable snowmen and all this other thing. I think that it's ironic that the fact that Bugs went into details about the calibers and everything, he didn't mention the smell or the stench of these animals. And that's the only question I have in the whole thing, because, one, I do believe there are such critters, whatever they may be, in existence, because there's just been too many sightings. And
yeah, there's something to it, obviously.
Sure. But the key to the thing, and I just heard where Bugs refaction, he's withdrawing.
I don't blame him.
Well, you know, here's the deal.
Not entirely. I mean, he offered me the opportunity to go out there if I wanted to.
Yeah, but see, that's not going to get the job done. If this actually happened, and I have reason to believe that maybe it did,
yep.
this would be such a contribution to the scientific community.
But if it turns out that way, see, if you put yourself in his shoes, a lot of things could happen. They could dig up the remains of this thing. They could run genetic tests.
Sure.
And maybe they couldn't discern between a human and whatever this was. And if that was the case, he could end up getting charged.
Well, the thing of it is, you know, there's been some folks this evening that said that, well, it was unethical to hunt at night. Well, predator hunting at night under light is legal in a lot of states. It's an accepted method of hunting predators. But, and, you know, he indicated that when they hit it with the light, you know, it stood up.
Yep.
Well, all the years that our family and myself, we've guided, you know, at night, even with a half a million candle power, a critter like that stand up, and you notice I use the term critter, could look an awful lot like a bear.
Yep.
And maybe that's why they had a 300 Weatherby there. You know what I mean? Now.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's tearing this whole thing apart in minutia.
Right.
To me, it's not.
I think he has a defense, and I think that one, that as legal counsel enters into this thing or legal advice, I think one of the salient points that should be considered is that, one, if if he is afforded, him and his two buddies are afforded immunity. And I think that this is possible because, one,
I don't think it would be offered. I appreciate your call, sir, but look, if a charge could be leveled like manslaughter, a lesser charge than murder, I'm sure it would be, but it could be, there could be a manslaughter charge easily. They would not, with a possible crime, what the hell do the police know? For all they know, he cooked up this story to cover what was a murder. The police are going to be open to all possibilities. And they're not going to offer that kind of immunity, not for that kind of crime. They're just not going to do it. So, frankly, I understand this fear, and I'm not surprised by it. In fact, if anything, it adds more weight to the whole thing, as far as I'm concerned. I'd be afraid, too. Plus, you got to remember that he's out there on his own. And I can tell you that before he went on the air, he said, I don't want to go on the air. I want to be able to contact the other two guys. So that, too, makes sense. So he's probably afraid he's too far out on a limb, and he is pretty far out on a limb. Frankly, I believe the story.
Can speaking an ancient language cause psychic disturbance, injury, or even death? It can if it's the secret language of the Church of Satan. Find out more in the October issue of the After Dark newsletter. And you can also read about voodoo, ghosts, and my editorial on the zombie at the traffic light. Call right now, 1-888-727-5505, or go online at coasttocoastam.com, and you'll also get a free CD of Art Bell and the Philadelphia Experiment with donations going to Al Bielek when you call 1-888-727-5505.
Here's what you missed on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Here are the unfortunate choices. We attack Iran and any other country that we think could be a problem for us today and in the future. Or we try to work out friendly, peaceful solutions with everybody. And I'm trapped now because if we go the military route, we are committed to doing it forever. On the other hand, can we truly create a peaceful planet? I don't know anymore.
Now we take you back to the night of April 16th, 1996, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Yeah, I had a question about, this is Tillman in Nashville, by the way.
Yes, sir.
I believe the guy's story about the Bigfoot.
I did too.
But wouldn't the bodies have decayed by now? That was like
yes, what? Yes, of course they would have. But decayed beyond identification? No. I mean, you can probably exhume, since it was buried and wasn't there for scavengers, you could probably exhume and do genetic testing and other type of testing.
So you think they could find some of the remains?
Sure.
Okay, and not to get off the subject, well, I guess it would be
on any subject you want.
The guy that wanted to know people's fears.
Yes.
I work for the post office, and I have a big fear that
you sir are people's fears.
Well, I have fear of some of the people I work with.
Yeah, that's what I meant. All right, thank you very much, a postal employee. Did any of you see Naked Gun 33 1/3? What a dumb movie, but the beginning of that movie was a riot. It was an absolute riot with babies bouncing down the stairs and in baby carriages. And this wave after wave of evil people with bombs strapped on from the Middle East. Mad postal employees with machine guns. It was a riot. The scenes in the beginning of that movie were a riot. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
This is Ron.
Okay, turn your radio off, Ron.
It's right there I am.
Yes, that's okay. Good. Get the radio off, or we'll have to leave the line.
It's off now.
That's good.
Okay, calling about the gentleman that called in about the Bigfoot.
Yes.
First of all, I want to say that I totally believe that these things could be possible.
The problem with this story is, if I may, is that going to from the end forward, he described this thicket as 150 feet by 50 feet, did he not?
Well, he said he was 50 feet into it, and that it was only, what, 4 or 5 feet tall, something like that.
Well, I think he described the side in the ravine of 150 feet long, 50 feet wide.
In totality, yes, but he only went 50 feet in.
Okay, well, he must have been crawling in.
That's what he said, yes.
Okay, but not crosswise, see, vertically, the long ways, because otherwise he'd be out the other side. Now, one thing that hunters would do...
No. You wouldn't be out the other side of something 150 feet long if you were 50 feet in.
No, but it was 150 feet long, 50 feet wide. What, am I incorrect in what I heard?
Well, he went in... We're going to have to play the thing again tomorrow night.
Just quickly, though. If he... Basically, when you're doing this, and I understand why I was, and I have nothing against it. I mean, well, I do morally about hunting at night and so forth. But logically, it seems like they would have walked together around the perimeter of this to check it out. I mean, it only would make sense. That would be my first instinct, is let's all walk together in the group. Obviously, very close together, so in case anything happened, all the fire would go the same direction. Okay, that's one thing. The second thing is when backing up in the beginning of the story, is when he's... When they sight this thing, mm-hmm. It seems logical that this animal being of that nature, to hear a motor and the headlights coming, when it's dark, Art, you can see headlights miles away out there.
Well, he said he had they had a very, very bright light. They were doing professional hunting.
Oh, no, but they hit that when they spotted it with the headlights.
Well, they spotted it with that big particular bright light they had, is what he said. And and that is the way a lot of people have hunted for a long time. It's
no, I
not
understand.
Necessarily proper,
south,
but...
And, yeah, but anyway, those are my two main concerns. I mean, that far away, of course, you know, and then having the time. And one thing he did say that lent to give it the positive side was he said once they he said they spotted it in the scope,
yes.
There was not a doubt he knew what it was. You remember that part?
Well, or at least that it didn't appear human. Now, that was my question. Now, if you had something standing on 2 feet, which he said it wasn't, it was down on all fours, or crouched, he said.
Correct.
And then it came up.
Right.
And it was, the whole thing was hairy. Now, and not dressed. I mean, that is not, to a hunter, a human.
No, I agree. But at that point, see, I mean, I'm just talking about things going really fast when this happens here. You put the you see this thing crouch, and obviously you see when you're doing that. Usually the eyes give away the animal first thing. That's what's going to reflect. Okay, they see that. They put the light on it. They bring the rifles right up to scope, and probably at that very instant the animal stands up in the scope, so they can see it. See it through the scope, and that's when he said that he had no doubt of what it was.
Tell me something.
Yes.
What would you advise him to do now? To come forward? Or to let sleeping Yeti lay, as it were?
Well, first of all, I'm on the 60-40 other side, and I don't believe it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that wasn't the question.
I can't advise somebody else on what to do. All I can say is what I would do.
What would you do?
I would have to walk somebody right to it, forget the pictures. Let's go do it. Let's go find them. Of course, you know, get yourself covered first legally.
All right. I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you cover yourself legally, and I understand his reluctance. No, I would say don't forget the pictures. The pictures are of the creatures as they were when they were shot. So I wouldn't say forget the pictures. I would say that would be a good place to begin, frankly. Very good place to begin.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 16th, 1996. Premier Radio Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired April 16th, 1996.
Well, all right, the reaction continues to pour in, and guess what? I've got one more communication here from Bugs. And here it is. We knew what we were shooting at. Using two 500,000 candle power quartz spotlights, we always knew what we were shooting at. These spotlights would light up the area for 300 yards to see with. We used Weaver 9 to 15 by 50 power scopes. If we could not identify what we were looking at, we would not shoot. There were a lot of cattle in this part of the country, and you sure didn't want to shoot a cow. We were sportsmen in the true sense. We lost a lot of money by not shooting. The weapons we were using were a Remington 700 BDL 243 caliber 125 grain bullet, a Weatherby 300 Magnum 280 grain bullet. The pistol I used was a Ruger 44 Magnum Blackhawk 240 grain bullet. The reason we hunted was that coyotes were bringing from $50 to $100 each, bobcats $750 or more. On good nights, you could make $400 or $500. And I can't read you the rest of this. So there you are, for whatever it's worth. And I, of course, have a flood of faxes here. Now, what I intend to do is take the half hour that we had and replay it tomorrow night, probably in this hour, so I can be sure that everybody by then has heard it. I'm just getting flooded with faxes. The Bigfoot story, the tone of it. Art, I've hunted a lot. I've been around a lot of good old boys like this guy and his buddies. I know a lot about firearms. Everything he said sounded right on. The whole tone of his story sounded authentic, and I tend to believe it. It rings sincere. I sure hope he and his buddies agree to reveal the photos and the location of the graves. His description of the eyes reflecting light tends to make me think these things are more animal than human. Human eyes don't reflect light. They sound like the giants who roamed earth described in the Old Testament of the Bible. Could they be holdovers? Or this, no doubt the Bugs account was real. To listen to him speak about how after the incident he gave up weapons was a very telling modulation in his voice during this time. When you get the tape of it, listen closely. It was certain to me that he feels deeply about the experience and is wanting absolution before his own death, Mark in Honolulu. About Bugs and the Bigfoot, another one from Riverside. By the way, hunting deer at night with a light is called jack lighting, and to my knowledge has been illegal in the States for quite some time. Yes, I believe that's true. So the moral questions aside, the legal questions looming, I personally judge it to be a real story. And I don't know exactly where it's going to take me, but I think it's real. And if we ever want to settle this whole thing, with regard to Bigfoot, here is an opportunity, one that I can't let pass. So we'll see where it goes. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Art. This is Brett calling from Chicago.
Hi, Brett.
Hi. I'd be inclined to believe the guy about the Bigfoot story.
Yeah, I was too.
And I'll tell you why. My father was a Marine sniper, recon division in Vietnam, and they have the same way of talking about death as a lot of Marines do. And the way he was talking about the way they came upon the thing and hunted it, it sounds a lot like a sniper. So I'd be inclined to believe the fellow. You know, pictures would be more proof, or a map or something like
Absolutely.
That. Absolutely. But the way he was talking.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. That's what I bought, too. The first facts I got was very tentative. It showed the concern he would have for his legal position. I would, too.
Sure.
And I just think there's a better-than-even chance that it's a true story, and it's an opportunity to finally find out.
And, you know, people who face death in such a way like that don't tend to lie about it. You know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can never tell. I mean, people might make up a story, but you could almost feel it. you almost had, I just, you know, it's hard. Maybe I'm just too naive. Some lady called yesterday, said I'm really
Yeah, but he had a believability in his voice.
Yeah, thank you very much. I thought so, too. And this is something that I would like to finally see settled. Wouldn't you? Or is it better not to know? I think there's very little choice now, legally and otherwise. I think this has to be followed on. But I will keep my word. Oh, my. Problems we make for ourselves, eh? Incredible. So we will be in follow-up contact with the this Bigfoot organization in Oregon, one that has serious resources. They've got helicopters, they've got financing. They're very serious about what they do, and they've communicated with me now two or three times since the facts, and now no doubt up in Oregon. In fact, I would like to get through to them. I'd like to talk to this Bigfoot organization now. Maybe even on the air. And the person who heads it knows my private number. If he wants to contact me here at the top of the hour, we'll get your reaction to it. And I don't even know if he's awake at this hour. I would hope that he would have been. Boy, I'll tell you. In the years I've done talk radio, there have been a number of times like this. When I sort of walk into something and kaboom, all of a sudden you've got a sort of a situation on your hands. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Art.
Yes.
It's an honor to talk to you.
And to you, sir. Well,
okay. My name is Fred. I'm from Kansas.
Hi, Fred.
I'm calling about your Bigfoot story.
Yeah.
Okay. I need to qualify myself. I'm a police officer. I've also hunted extensively. I've shot everything from Desert Javelina to Moose in Canada.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm also involved in a tactical team, long-range shooting, and I've got a lot of experience in ballistics and different calibers. You had a caller that was a former Army sniper a while ago.
Yep.
And started talking about loads available for the particular rifles that Bugs was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I have to agree with him. He's right.
Did you? First, let me ask you, did you hear Bugs?
Yes, I did.
You did, okay.
The overall story itself was fairly believable, the way it was told. Mm-hmm. Yes, he would have been able to identify it very easily at night with that type of light and with a good quality rifle scope. I'm not aware of a 9x15 by 50 millimeter Weaver scope being produced, but he may have been, you know, close anyway. The cartridges are not available in the bullet weights he was talking about. Not from the factory would they even be able to shoot those bullet weights if they were available from a custom loader.
Mm-hmm.
That's what really threw me on it. Immediately I picked up on that. And then, of course, as the Army sniper was talking about, Newton's law, you can't get around that.
You can't get around that. However, the animal, I mean, to the shooter, it may have, in fact, the animal may have done that in reaction to being hit that way. Now, that doesn't mean that the bullet, the physics, I understand what you're saying about the physics of it, but the animal may have reacted in that manner when it was hit.
Possibly, but according to Bugs, the animal was charging toward him, and he's talking about a 300-pound animal.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you want to talk about a 44 Magnum being able to stop something in its tracks or knock it backwards, you still have the momentum of the animal is charging toward him, and to throw it back 3 or 4 feet is, you know, virtually impossible.
Yeah, let me ask you a question. You are a police officer?
Yes, I am.
If somebody came to you and they sat down in the police station and they told you the story and they said, look, I want to lead you to the bodies. I want to clear this up. It's been on my conscience all these years. What would your inclination be?
Well, absolutely, we're going to check this out. And not necessarily the possible homicide. But, you know, we get calls. People see lights in the sky, you know, all kinds of things. Mm. And, you know, sometimes it's easily explainable.
Sometimes it is. But when you have shot something and buried it and know where you buried it and took photographs of it, then it seems to me you've got something that somebody in your position would at least follow up on.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. I would check this out. And please understand, I believe in Bigfoot too. You know, my sister lived in Vancouver, Washington for a long period of time, and I was in the area. And, you know, in that country, you can walk past something 3 feet away and you wouldn't see it. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable, the rainforest. And I'd say there's a real strong possibility Bigfoot exists. I don't have a problem with that. I have a little problem with Bug's story.
All right. I appreciate your input. Thank you very much. And there is some more input. Now, whenever anybody has told a story on this program or any other, any story that you hear from anybody, it will be picked apart six ways from Sunday. I would say, based on the faxes that I've received, I've probably got about 100 faxes here, and about 80 or 90% of them seem to believe the story. About that percentage. So there you go. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yes, good evening, Art.
Hi.
Lone Eagle.
Yes, sir. Turn your radio off there, Lone Eagle.
Let me get to the telephone. Okay, got it.
All right, good.
Well, I tend to agree with the Army sniper and the policeman from Kansas that you've got trash. However, the gentleman
I'm not sure that's what they said.
Well, they
had some doubts about it. They didn't say trash.
They didn't. They said that some of the things he said just couldn't be true. The other thing is that I want Bugs to know that based on what he's already said, he's not going to be that hard to track. And if he has, in fact, done what he said he's done, based on his age, he was in his 30s when he did this.
Yeah.
He should have known better. Not only is he a blight to hunters, but he's also a blight to Vietnam veterans. He casts the image that Vietnam veterans are killers, and that's what he did.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. All right. That enough. Thank you. I was in Vietnam. That's a bunch of crap. He did not cast some sort of a shadow of all Vietnam vets as killers. That's ridiculous. Look, I'm not a hunter. I don't kill things. But that statement is just asinine. And that kind of makes me angry, if you want to know the truth. Look, whatever else you may think of the story, I can easily understand that somebody may have regrets over this. Can't you understand that? Don't you think that you might, if you did such a thing, have regrets about what you did? And the approach that you just came on with, that kind of made me angry. I didn't get that out of it at all. And now I think that your objection to the story is more of one based on some sort of moral judgment that you've made. Or perhaps some guilt that you feel yourself, that tweaked in you. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Hate to sound like a parrot, but you are one hard guy to get a hold of.
Well, I'm glad you made it. Where are you?
I'm in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Yes, sir. K-R-A-E.
Yes, sir. I am listening to K-Ray. Mm-hmm. I know just a little while ago you guys got hooked up in Laramie, too.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
But I'm originally from Minnesota, northern Minnesota.
Yes, sir.
I'm talking about the Bigfoot thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure whether he's right or you know if the story is legitimate or not. That's not really why I was calling. I was just trying to put in a little bit of my input on. I used to shine a lot also myself. I don't know if you know what I mean by shining, but using lights at night to hunt animals.
I know. I mean, people. Look, we all know that it's done, has been done. People have done it for years. We know it is against the law. And I'm not out to render, you know, some sort of moral judgment on what he did. I'm not trying to look at the story from that point of view. I mean, that's certainly a talk we could have. We could have a discussion about the morality of what he did. But it was a long time ago. It's a done deal. I think now, if we believe the story is true, then we should be looking at trying to get to the graves, trying to get the photographs, trying to find out if it's all real.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't actually think he'll come out and it'd be pretty hard for him to come out and actually do something like that. And the reason why I'm saying that is, like, I'm not even willing to give you my personal phone.
I understand.
Over the telephone
I understand.
I know.
Sir, how old are you?
How old am I?
Yeah.
I'm 32.
Let me tell you something about age. As you get at another 20 years, you'll begin to reflect on things that you've done in your life. And as you get older, in your 30s, this might not seem apparent. But as you enter the latter half of your life, let's say, you begin to reflect and think about things you've done earlier in your life in a way that you would not when you're 30. I'll just simply tell you that is true.
Oh, yeah, I can understand that, and I can relate to it. My father went through the same thing. He can't even shoot an animal anymore, but he used to do the same things before.
Yeah.
But it's a hard thing to come out and, you know, make it public to people. And, you know, whether he'd have a lawyer or not, he would still be faced with them kinds of charges. I find it hard to believe he'd get off on that.
Well, there is no statute of limitations on murder. Thank you very much for the call. There is no statute of limitations. However, again, I can tell you, I mean, this is personal experience. As you get older, you begin to reflect on things that you've done, and we have all done things that we are sorry for, things that we carry guilt about. You heard it from a caller here a little while ago. I kind of got angry about that, but we all carry things, you know. We're imperfect beings, and I'm certainly an imperfect being, and don't mind telling you that. And I've had moments of serious reflection about things I've done in my life that I'm not proud of. So I understand why somebody would want this off their chest or want it cleared up in their life. Don't you? Maybe in your 20s or your 30s, you can't consider that. But I assure you, as you get older, you do have moments of reflection about this kind of thing. We'll be right back.
Can speaking an ancient language cause psychic disturbance, injury, or even death? It can if it's the secret language of the Church of Satan. Find out more in the October issue of the After Dark newsletter. And you can also read about voodoo, ghosts, and my editorial on the zombie at the traffic light. Call right now, 1-888-727-5505, or go online at coasttocoastam.com, and you'll also get a free CD of Art Bell and the Philadelphia Experiment, with donations going to Al Bielek when you call 1-888-727-5505.
Now we take you back to the night of April 16th, 1996, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Okay, we're going to have to start all over again.
I'm sorry about that, Art.
Everybody should know the only thing we're allowed to take is first names only on the air. So this is Mark, and also from Cheyenne.
Yeah,
yes,
I do apologize for that, Art.
That's all right.
Hey, I'll tell you, I had a couple problems with what Bugs was saying.
Yes.
And just to qualify myself, I've done hunting all throughout North America and in Southern Africa.
Uh-huh.
And done quite a bit of competitive shooting along with that.
Okay.
The one thing he did say, they were out there, the reason they were hunting in the 70s was the fur trade.
That's what he said,
hides were worth so much money.
Yeah.
I guess, like you said, on the facts. Why would anyone be using a 300 Weatherby to begin with when you're hunting furs?
I don't know.
I've done some of that quite a bit, and you got a gun like that, and you lose a lot of accuracy. The recoil on a 300 Weatherby is extremely violent.
Well, they had a lighter caliber gun as well, didn't they?
Yeah, they did have a 243, and that's very much believable.
If there was three of them, maybe they had different weapons for different possible applications. I don't know. I'm not a hunter, so
yeah,
I don't know.
But and that may very well be. I don't really know why they'd have a 300 with them. But in any event, and also like that policeman was saying, the bullet weights. I did a little looking while I was listening to that, and it just sounded bogus. And I tell you, I couldn't find anything as big as what they were saying for either caliber.
Well, he could have more easily, in the thread of his story, just told us the caliber he was using without telling us that he had loaded them to this degree. In other words, he didn't have to add that to the story. He could have left it at we use the following calibers, right?
Yeah, if he'd have done that, and then that's like I say that you know there might be there's a lot of obscure bullet manufacturing companies that this fella reloaded. Who knows?
Especially for hunters, or they might have done reloads. I know. All right.
Yeah. One more thing.
I've got a newscast coming up. Do you want to hold?
Yeah, if you'd let me.
I'll let you. Sure.
All right,
stay right where you are.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight, featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 16th, 1996. Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight, featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 16th, 1996.
Good morning, everybody. What a night it has been. Another one to mark down in the annals of strange talk radio. Anyway, it's good to be here, and we've got another hour to go. I'll tell you a funny story. I'm not a big game hunter. I'm concerned more about my little game, my little wild feral cat. And he has been venturing forth in the middle of the night. And I just went out there during this break, and my big 17-pounder, my lump of love, my big 17-pound cat, Abby, came over and sat on my lap. Not an unusual thing for him to do, and promptly began to purr and beg getting petted. Well, out comes our little scaredy cat friend, feral cat. He's looking at this. And he's watching, you know, this big cat is his buddy. I mean, he wants to be buddies with my big cat. And so he came strolling out of the bedroom, cautiously, tentatively, and he'll back up, and then he'll come forward a little and back up, you know, scaredy cat. And he looked at the big 17-pounder sitting on my lap, and he had the doggondest expression on his face, like, are you out of your mind? You're sitting on a human lap. It was like, really? Look at what he's doing. He's sitting on that human's lap. Has he lost his cat mind? And, well, maybe I could do well, but I better not. But, gee, it looks like it's okay. He's not getting shredded, and so let me get a little closer. And he got so close to me. This cat is coming around. Slowly but surely, he's coming around. My big 17-pounder is helping, showing him that humans do not shred little cats that get near humans. He just had a natural inbred fear of human beings, but that's slowly beginning to seep away, and he gets closer and stays out longer. But if you could have seen the expression on this cat's face, it was like, have you lost your cat mind? You're actually on a human being. What's the matter with you?
Now we take you back to the night of April 16th, 1996, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
All right, the last communication from Bugs is as follows. Art, the bullet grain could have been 75. I don't remember. I know that I use a Sierra boat tail bullet, whatever that is. I don't know. But he says, I know I use a Sierra boat tail bullet. I have not shot a weapon since that time. I sold all my rifles, all my pistols. I'll write the entire story in detail to you tomorrow and fax it to you. Then my fax machine is just absolutely burning up with people. It's sort of come down to people arguing with people, callers arguing with callers here. And it's beginning to remind me of the Kennedy assassination discussions that have gone. In other words, we're getting away from the original story that Bugs told, and we're getting into sort of an argument about the minutia, the detail, and I'm not sure that that is that important as you try to judge the story. Don in Escondido writes, out of the Midway reloading catalog, Barnes rifle bullets, 243 caliber goes to 115 grain, 300 Weatherby magazine, 30 caliber bullet weights up to 250 grain. Also, spear bullets, whatever those are, to 105 grain and 243 caliber. Page 36, Sierra bullets go up to 107 grains and 243 caliber, page 37. So, who knows? Art, the solution to your Bigfoot problem is easy. Bugs should return to the burial site and mark it with spray paint. He should then mail you a detailed map so that you can remail it to the Bigfoot organization. This will keep Bugs completely anonymous. Nothing would reveal his identity, no name, no mailing point, no nothing but a map. Dave in Independence, Missouri. I suppose that's possible, but the sense, and I'm just going to give you the sense that I get from this man, is that he wants it settled in his life. I guess he doesn't want to, at least ultimately, anonymously, talk about this. He wants to get it behind him. At least that's the sense that I have of it. Then this, Art. Now, see, there's more of it. Listen to this. Art, the guy on now, referring to a caller he heard, I guess, is full of it. You can buy 125 grain bullets from Sierra. Why meat hunters or varmint hunters would carry a 300 Weatherby, I guess, is in question. But indeed, you could get such a gun. I don't know if you're going to be out hunting. I would assume that you'd have a variety of calibers with you. Or this, good morning, Art. I'm just giving you a sense of some of what's coming in. I couldn't possibly read all of them. I've hunted since I was 9 years old. I'm 48 now. I've been around firearms all my life and have hunted many North American big game animals. The phone conversation with Bugs sounds very real. I shoot a Winchester 300 mag, which is very close to the 300 Weatherby mag. Even with the hard impact of a high-velocity, heavy-grain bullet, animals can still run for some distance. The ideal shot most hunters try for is a long shot if possible. Unless the bullet impacts the backbone, which would immobilize the animal immediately, an animal can run a long distance. Usually after the impact of the first bullet, the animal's adrenaline kicks in, and in the following shots, unless bones are hit, seem to have very little effect. With reference to the caller that stated that the impact of a bullet would not knock the animal back 3 or 4 feet, I have a video of 200-pound deer actually being lifted off their feet and knocked back at least 3 feet. Gentleman may have been a sniper, but apparently he's not shot any live animals. Bug's story sounds very credible. He's either done his homework well or it really happened. Wade in Idaho. Art, heard the story about the Bigfoot. Quite impressive. Just a couple of questions. Why did it take him 23 years to come forward with this incredible information? Why didn't they anonymously notify the authorities? Well, first of all, they are not involved in this at this point. If you listen to his story, the other two are not part of what he has had to say so far. And, in fact, he needs to check with them before he goes very much further with this. And as far as why come forward after all these years, well, there's been a lot of that lately, hasn't there? People coming forward after a lot of years, and you always say why. And there really is an answer to it. It's the one I gave last hour, and I'll give you again now. As you get older, you begin to review your life. It is a very natural process, and when you're 20 or 30, you don't think so. But I can assure you, As you reach the midway point, you will begin to review what you've done in your life. Things weigh upon you. You're not alone. It will happen to all of us, or nearly all of us. And so I understand it personally. Or this, finally, and I'll hold it at that. Art, the Bigfoot story was told sincerely. 44 mag hitting a 350-pound object is like me throwing you a bowling ball. The law of physics says you will be moved backward a few feet. So it just goes on and on. You know, we're going to argue over the minutiae of this. And I'm not sure that the grain weights and all the rest of it, or how he recalled it, were that important. And he said that, in essence, himself in this last communication. It could have been, he said. This is a guy who, over two decades ago, stopped using guns, sold his guns. You're back on the air again. Thank you for waiting.
Hey, thanks, Art. With regard to the 44, hey, I believe that. And I really think this guy's story is credible. But, you know, the data I have on a 220 grain, and he says he used a 280 grain bullet with that 300 Weatherby.
Yeah.
You're dealing with almost 3,200 pounds, foot-pounds of energy at 100 yards.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, that's a lot of energy.
Yep.
He's talking that they each shot him four times. They shot the Bigfoot four times.
Yep.
That's the only other problem I have.
It would depend, like the facts I just got through, it would depend on where the hits were made.
Well, and that's I'm assuming he qualified himself as an Army sniper, so I would assume he's a pretty decent shot. I got to believe they're hitting most of these shots in pretty vital areas.
Again, we're sitting here picking somebody's story apart in minutia here and saying, well, this or that can't happen, or this can happen, or why didn't this happen? I thank you for the call, but we're getting there's 1,000 different stories and thoughts in the big city about this. I thought overall the story sounded, I thought it was credible. But I've been fooled before. You know, who am I? I'm not a hunter. I don't know about all these things. I just know that I thought it sounded credible. And now I really do feel in the middle of this, morally. So in that sense, Bugs has managed to shift some of the weight, perhaps. But it's like, I understand that you would want to do that. There are certain things that you just don't want to die with the weight of. That is a really normal human reaction. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning, Art. This is Randy in Tampa, Florida.
Hi, Randy.
All right. You know, I missed the first hour of your program this morning.
Yes,
sir. I've been picking up on the rest of it. You know, it seems like to me Bugs could borrow a handheld GPS and go out there on that spot and take the longitude and latitude and send it to these people in Oregon with the helicopters.
Yeah, you could do any of that.
Yeah,
I think, though, that if you listened to him, that the object of what he's trying to do right now is to get straight with it, you know, not just to tell somebody where to go dig.
Right.
But he wants to get personally straight with it.
Right. Well, he could come forth later after they found that, if they did, in fact, find any remains out there, because only he would have those numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And he could prove who he was with his numbers later, you know. Cause
yeah, there's no doubt about it, but I think he intends more than that. And I understand that.
Yeah, possibly so. Yeah. But I'd really like to see that thing resolved, because I've been keeping up with it now for 30 years.
And well, this is one of the... Look, if you class leads, no matter what you think of the story, this is one of the better ones I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been in the middle of this kind of information for years, too. So
maybe
it goes nowhere, maybe it goes somewhere, but it's a good lead.
Right. Are you going to replay it again tomorrow night?
I am.
Yeah, well, I'll make sure to catch that.
All right, sir.
Appreciate it.
All right. Take care. Yes. The answer to that is yes. And I hope that some of you will crank out recorders. I know that you didn't expect it tonight. I didn't. So you weren't prepared for it. Tomorrow night, get out your recorders. fine, record it, tear it apart, listen to it. At least that way, you'll have the facts, or you'll have them as they were given. And so we don't have to try to remember what he said. We'll hear again what he said, and you'll be able to record it, and if you wish, transcribe it and tear it apart. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm calling about the Bigfoot story.
Yes, sir.
I believe him. I mean, just listen to his voice. That's the main thing about it. His voice sounded real genuine. And
all right, you've got your radio on, don't you?
Hang on, let me turn it down.
Yeah, thank you. Look, I don't want to have to tell people to do that. When you get on the air, turn it down, turn it off automatically. All right, go ahead, sir.
He just seemed real genuine, and his voice almost trembled.
Yeah.
When he spoke about it.
I know. I make the same judgment. And we got into this minutia argument about how many grains of this or that.
Hey, none of that, man.
But I sat and I listened to the story as a whole, and it clicked.
It did. I mean, you can't make up a story like that and sound that genuine.
Well, you might.
You could.
You might. I don't, look, it could be baloney. But I just lean toward thinking it was true, that's all.
I do, too.
Anyway, we'll find out, won't we?
Yes, we will.
Appreciate the call.
Have a good night.
You, too. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. Going once, going twice, gone. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, this is Lucky.
Lucky, huh?
Yeah, in Ohio.
Ohio Lucky, okay.
Yeah. I was wondering, last week you said something about what would happen after the creation, or after a disaster, I mean.
Yes, in other words, what would rise from the ashes of any major disaster, whatever it would be, yes.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, it got me thinking about the last time that there was a disaster. And I know you don't like to talk about the Bible. But,
no, we talk about the Bible all the time. I just don't like people quoting from the Bible directly. We don't read scripture on the air here.
I understand.
Good.
Well, in the story of Adam and Eve, when Cain slew Abel, and then he was banished from the garden and went into a far land, and there he knew his wife. So she must have been on earth at least as old as he was. Doesn't that make sense?
All right, sir. Yeah, I guess. That is not the spirit, though, of my question. The spirit of my question would relate to a more modern disaster, economic, social. Who knows, comet slamming in, Ebola decimation, whatever might occur to a industrialized, advanced society like ours that would set it back. The way I'm sure the Unabomber wished it would be set back. What would be on the other side? In other words, would society form with a distaste for technological things, technological, kind of like the revolution in China, the Mao revolution, where people who wore glasses were getting slaughtered, that kind of deal. So what would come out on the other side? What kind of society would come out on the other side? Would that society begin immediately rebuilding its technological base? East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Yes, Mr. Bell.
Mr. Caller.
Oh, how are you doing today?
I'm all right.
The thing about that Bigfoot thing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Bigfoot thing is
yes.
That the only way he can really prove it is to come up with a fact.
That's what he's offering.
And that's all I can say about that. Prove it. Thank you, Mr. Bell.
You're welcome, Mr. Caller. Have a good morning. That's what it sounded like to me he's hoping to do, but I am not surprised that he would be concerned about the legal implications of it for himself. I would. So you'd be sitting there weighing the need to get this off your chest against the possible legal and real-world effect that it would have on you and your family, wouldn't you? Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, Mr. Bill. This is Robert from Lincoln, Nebraska.
Hi, Robert.
I called you, I talked to you just last week about the remote control. And I was listening to your Sunday show, and when you played the Bigfoot tape,
mm-hmm.
I've heard those noises before.
Where?
In my childhood, I lived in a small little town in Washington called Maple Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And Bigfoot, or Big Feet, used to go down by the river about 2 miles away from our home and fish in there during the night.
And you've heard those sounds made then?
At various times.
Well, I'll tell you, I can only tell you this. If I heard that sound, I would be gone, gone, gone. I don't have the what would be the word, guts of a lot of hunters, you know, to stand there with this high-caliber gun and plug away at something. It would just scare the you-know-what out of me, very simply. That sound is just, it's one of the most horrible sounds. Let me see if I've got that one queued up. Yeah, listen to this. My guest Sunday said, yes, that he believes is the absolute legitimate sound of a Bigfoot for what it's worth. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Good morning. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Fan calling from Central Point.
Yes.
And I have done some hunting here in Oregon. Believe it or not, my father was a coon hunter in the 70s.
I see.
And you do a lot of hunting at night. Hunting for the smaller varmints with lights.
Yes.
It's a done thing. My mother was also raised in Northern California, and she's a woman who I think has great conviction and is a very honest person.
Yes.
And she can tell you stories about going to the river to see Bigfoot tracks.
Listen, can you hold on? I've got a break here.
Sure.
All right. I don't doubt, I've heard so many stories now, that I don't doubt there is something to this. I don't know what. And I don't even know if Bug's story is true. I just know that there are so many reports, there's obviously something to it. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight, featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 16th, 1996. Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from April 16th, 1996.
Sure is. Off into some pretty strange territory once again this morning, as usual. We've got a caller on the line. Let's go back. Thank you for waiting, hon. You're back on the air.
Thank you, Art. Something else I'd like to say is I do believe his story. When you're young, you do things that you regret. And I've seen people do some pretty stupid stuff and,
sure.
Hunting, killing things that they shouldn't.
Sure.
But, and he was a young person. And I can see why he's been reluctant to come forward because of tonight, all of the, what was he doing? What were they doing hunting in the middle of the night? Well, I have to tell you, I've done it.
A lot of people have done it.
Right. We're from small towns here in Oregon where, from logging communities. And hey, we've all poached deer, to feed families. And, in the 70s, there was a lot of money in it. And hung out with the guys enough hunting that I can see where the adrenaline rush would definitely get you chasing something like that.
Yep. I've got a fax here, and somebody else who believes it and says, look, the guy who suggested they were hunting for fur really should go back and recall what was being hunted. Coyotes, bobcats, etc., hardly for fur animals. They were hunted for bounty. In some cattle, sheep country, the bounties can go very high. And I think that's right. There were some pretty serious bounties. I recall talk of that when I was younger. But I was never a hunter. I appreciate your comment and everybody else's. But I kind of, you know, naive me, remember that lady yesterday? I sort of believe the story. I don't know about the minutiae, the arguments about grains of this and grains of that. I just listened to the story as a whole, and I listened to him tell it, and I thought it was real. Guy's not asking for any money for the story. He's not trying to squeeze money out of this somehow or another. The only thing he mentioned was legal counsel, and that I can understand. In fact, here is a fax that is worth considering. If the story is true, this is from somebody named Dan, and he revealed the photos and location of the graves, what do you suppose the legal ramifications would be? Would this creature be considered human or animal? Perhaps somebody in the audience with some expertise in the law could shed light on all this. Well, all right, a couple of things. The photos certainly would help in that determination, but if, and I listened carefully to his story, if he was shooting at something that was covered with fur, that wasn't dressed in any human clothes, covered with fur, then I would think there would be no jury in the land that would convict them of murder. I mean, they maybe of poaching, maybe of illegally hunting with a light. Again, I'm not a hunter, so I don't know all about this. But with regard to his legal position, I wouldn't think it would be considered murder. I know there are some people in the audience who would say, "Look, you shot some sort of intelligent creature, and that is murder." But I would define murder as an intentional pre-considered action. Murder involves knowing you're killing a human being or even an intelligent life form and that you plan to do it. Isn't that how we define murder? In degrees, there are degrees of murder. But premeditation is one very, very important aspect to any of those charges of murder. Manslaughter? Well, I'm not sure. There could be, I suppose, some legal ramifications to this. The fears? What would I be afraid of if I project myself into this man's position? They would dig up something. They would dig up some graves. They would do genetic testing. And what guarantees are there? If there wasn't much left, but enough genetic material to do a test, and it was close enough to human genetic material, then the law might follow on with some sort of charge. Definitely might. Now, again, I might be wrong, but I believe that with respect to the gorilla, for example, there is only one tiny part of 1% of genetic difference measurable. It's a definite difference, but it's very, very small. And so something in between a human being and or some link might come up genetically looking about the way we do. So I would have concerns. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, Art.
Hello.
About your Bigfoot story?
Not mine.
Oh, whoever.
Yeah.
The only thing that bothers me about the deal is they say they were there hunting for varmints for money, and I mean, that would pay pretty good, I would think, a Bigfoot. So, you know, that kind of about the only thing I think about it.
Well, it would depend on how you thought about it. In other words, that was not a creature for which bounty was offered.
Well, but still, I mean...
He said in his letter... he said that, coyotes were bringing $50 to $100 each. Bobcats, $750 or more. On good nights, you can average $400 or $500. So that's a significant earning for a night.
But I would think that a Bigfoot would bring a lot more with that, with the publicity and, you know, I mean, it'd be like a big game deal, you know, it almost be
well,
like
if you listen to
catching
what,
the Loch Ness monster.
Yes, but if you listen to what he said, he was not entirely sure he had not shot a human.
Well, again, you know, humans don't have, aren't covered with hair and...
Humans don't bring bounties, they bring charges.
Right, but he clearly stated that it wasn't human.
Well, he didn't clearly state it. If you listen carefully, he said the face looked like a cross between a human and some other animal. But
I think
that the organs, the sexual organs, the other organs, were the same as human, is what he said.
Mm-hmm. I think I'd scan it and mounted the head on my wall myself.
All right. Well, thanks for that wisdom. I've skinned it and mounted the head on my wall. Boy, a lot of big game hunters out there we're talking to this morning. Such wisdom. I'm going to put the head on my wall. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. Going once, going twice. A wild card line, you are on the air. Hi.
Charlie, liberal in California.
Well, then again, there are some heads that would look all right on the wall. Yes, Charles.
First of all, I hate hunters. I think they're animals, vicious Neanderthals, very, very backward people.
Bad.
Someone who could get enjoyment out of shooting an innocent creature, I think, is absolutely disgusting, perverse. Anyway, I had a personal question for you. You know, we were talking about this virus, you know, that infected the primates.
There are now three more that have come down with it, and they are saying they may have to eliminate the entire population.
Let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
If there were a virus that struck in the United States that we could, you know, judge down to a certain area, a certain geographic area, would you be in favor of cutting those people off, installing the military, and perhaps... say eliminating this group of people in order to keep the virus from spreading, or would you consider that to be communistic, or what would be your feelings on dealing with that?
Yeah, you're describing the scenario in Outbreak.
Exactly. What are your feelings?
It would depend on what the scientists were telling me, Charles. But the bottom line, of course, would be if there was a near sure. Result that the general population would be infected, that 90% would die, then you would be weighing the rights of the many versus the rights of the few, and I think that gives you your answer, but it would be very hard, Charles.
Well, yeah, I would agree with that to an extent, and I think, unfortunately, there are people out there who do not understand that people in the government sometimes, including the president on down, sometimes have to make decisions between two evils, one being terribly evil, the other one being not as evil, and sometimes you have to make that decision. It's not a good decision.
Well, sometimes, Charles, people in the government view as evil things that you, I, for example, might not.
Exactly, and sometimes they make mistakes like that, but I don't think they're made out of maliciousness. I think that sometimes people with good intentions make terrible mistakes, but this is a situation.
Do you think they asked Janet Reno this the other day on Meet the Press on Sunday? If you could go back and do it again, would you do it differently? Let me ask you that about Waco. I've heard you spout off on Waco a million times, but if you could go back and act in a different way from the government's point of view, would you?
You want to know something? The only mistake the government made, in my opinion, was using the military vehicles to take down the building. And I think they should have done better investigative type work and maybe try to get him outside. But once those people took over that building, my belief is that they waited 50 something days, which is showing extreme patience. I don't know. I think that. You know, you wait as long as you can, but then you have to take some type of action. I think 50-something days is very, very long to wait. So my analysis of it is that the military vehicles were wrong, but I do not. I can't blame the government. I don't think they were completely wrong in this.
Do you think that there will be?
I think they were very patient.
Do you think? Just your best guess. Do you think there'll be repercussions this April 19th, this Friday?
Yes, and I think some people are going to blame. I don't think you'll have anything as big as what happened in Oklahoma, but I think you'll have some small incidents, and I think it's terrible how people blame that on the government. I'll tell you this, though. If you have another Oklahoma, you are going to have a semi-civil war in this country.
I know.
And who you have to blame it on?
Yeah,
blame it on the extremists, because it's not the government's fault.
All right. I agree with that last part. Another Oklahoma-sized incident, God help us, would bring about, he said, a semi-civil war. I don't know what it would bring. It would bring something awful. It would bring something awful. Is it possible? Yes. Oh, yeah. Is it probable? I don't know that I'd go that far. Possible? Definitely. It's got to stop. The collision that I've been warning and talking about for so long is inevitable if we don't change our direction. I just see it coming. And I've described it as two freight trains coming at each other with unstoppable motion and inertia. And I've not yet seen anything that's going to get in the way or prevent the collision if we continue on this course.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from April 16th, 1996.
Back to the phones. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Yes, sir.
Hi.
Ed over in L.A.
Yes, sir.
Last night you were musing on the support that Clinton is evoking from the female population.
It's about a 27-point difference between Clinton and Dole as far as females are concerned. Yes, uh-huh.
During the one of the campaign debates, the CNN people set up a set of people, female on one side and male on the other, I guess.
I remember that, yes. And they all had little buttons they could press.
Right. When they did that, in the campaign discussion, somebody, was putting up a point about education.
Yes.
You could always see the female line head upward,
yep.
depending on what was being said.
Right.
And it seems to me that if you look at the photo ops that the president and the first lady have put out for the last 6 or 7 months, being in classroom settings or having children in the Oval Office behind the president when he's signing something or other.
Yes.
He's sending out messages to the female population. And it seems to me that that's reaping benefits for him.
Well, that just shows that he knows what he's doing as being a politician. Now, I remember, and I know you do too, Ronald Reagan, George Bush, other Republican presidents who have at various times during signings of bills lined up police officers behind them and other groups that they thought would be favorably received, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm
No, it's a good it's a good observation. Thank you very much. And I would rather believe that that is the message that's resonating so heavily with females, as opposed to the difference in appearance between the two men. But I continue to suspect that that is also a factor. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Good morning, Art.
Hello, where are you?
This is down in Flint, Michigan.
Where? Oh, in Flint, Michigan, all right.
Yeah. I'm shocked that I'm through, honestly. I've been trying so long.
Well, you're in.
Great. Have you gotten any information regarding the decoding of the Beacon Stone artifact?
The what?
It's called the Beacon Stone.
No, never heard of it.
Crystal Rock?
Never heard of it.
Well, there's a guy in Seattle that's decoding it on his computer.
Hmm.
Get images from it?
Oh, no. Now, I've certainly heard a lot of stories about objects, particularly crystal and glass, that they speculate are able to retain a sort of a memory, an image, possibly even sounds or pictures. I know that sounds odd to a lot of people, but there is a lot of work being done in this area, and Crystal would have particular properties in that
right.
vein.
Yeah, that's what's coming out of it.
Some yeah.
kind of, pictures.
Well, that's very interesting. I'll see what I can find out about it and follow up on it. But yes, there is quite a bit of legitimate research now being done into the retention of memories or sounds or visual images with regard to material objects. It's a really weird science, but believe me, they're doing a lot of research. So I'll check into that one. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art.
Hello.
This is Larry, Mobile.
Hello, Larry, Mobile, Alabama.
Yes, sir. Are we still on the air?
I hope so.
Yeah, I can't get you here. They they take you off at 4 a.m.
Well, that's because they go to a morning show.
I guess so. About the Bigfoot thing.
Yes.
I dabble in photography, and it just seems like he mentioned Polaroid pictures. The only problem there is they could be doctored up slightly.
Well, I thought that Polaroids were generally, particularly then, uh-huh. if you could date them, very, very difficult to doctor.
Well,
Polaroid's particularly difficult to doctor.
You may be right there. You may have me on that.
In other words, if they're able to date the photographs
yeah.
to the time period that he talked about,
uh-huh.
I think then, and I recall pretty well, Polaroids were regarded as legitimate then.
Uh-huh. Well, you may have me on that. I tend to believe him. He sounds very real. Did he indicate where this happened, the state, or could that even be talked about?
I know where it happened, and I know where he is, but
uh-huh.
I have given my word, so.
Yeah, that can't be revealed. The only other problem I have, and like I say, I tend to believe him, but there's always that element of suspicion.
Of course.
20-plus years, 73, so that's what, 26 years? 23 years?
96 now, yeah.
Why did it wait this long to come
years.
Out? Is that a viable question?
Yeah, well, it's a viable question, but it has a viable answer.
Uh-huh.
And for me, that would be, I know that at my age, I'm 50 now.
Sure.
I'll be 51 in June.
Well, I just turned 40.
Yeah, well, there you are. another 10 years. During the next 10 years, you'll begin to think more and more about what you've done in your life.
Yeah.
And people do that. And so, we've had a lot of things like that lately in the news, if you'll recall. People who did things or memories that were old that come flooding back.
Sure.
And each time people ask the same question, why would they come forward after all this time?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is things weigh on people as they get older.
The old conscience gets to you.
Well, yeah, sure.
Uh-huh. Well, it's mighty interesting. I tell you, this Bigfoot thing's been around for all these God knows how many years.
Yep.
It's like the UFO thing. If anything could come out, if this could be 90% solved, it would be worth all the effort.
I couldn't agree more, thank you. Even if we got the photographs and they went to the grave sites and got DNA evidence that was not could not be explained. Now, I wouldn't imagine they'd get much more than that after all these years. But as long as it was buried, not available to scavengers, I would think there would be that much. Even if all they found was bones, they'd get DNA. I think. I mean, they can... close to getting dinosaur DNA, right? So something just 20 years ago I would think would yield DNA. It would be nice to see something settled about it. I quite agree. I mean, this is a story that stands out because it offers proof, or the possibility of proof. So naturally, it does stand out a little bit. Very interesting. And you're talking to somebody who sat here and listened to a lot of truth or trash stories over the years. But I've been fooled. I've been fooled. I can be fooled. I'm naive. You heard that, lady. I just long to have this kind of thing settled. I feel for him. I'm no Bill Clinton. I'm not going to say I feel his pain, but I feel... and understand the fact that he wants to get this settled in his life. Wouldn't that make sense to you? It does to me. I think after having listened to this tonight, I'd probably have the same reaction, folks. Frankly, listening to the people, I probably would have the same reaction. Good night, America.